unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
McCoy is right in pointing out the enormous danger potential in any contact with life and intelligence as fantastically advanced as this. But I must point out that the possibilities, the potential for knowledge and advancement is equally great. Risk. Risk is our business. That's what the starship is all about. That's why we're aboard her.
And we are live. Welcome to a special edition of the Graylian Report, live from the dark disquiet that is the Moho Discontinuity. I'm your happy host, Micah Hanks, broadcasting from hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface in the Graylian bunker. I'm joined in studio, as always, by our friendly Graylian Report production staff, the one and only Mr. Producer, Chris Hayes. How are you, Chris?
I am great. And to quote Matthew Oakley, that chicken does have some zang.
Doesn't it? Yes, indeed. We were treated to a wonderful chicken dinner by our producer. And I tell you what, the man pushing all the buttons back there, hopefully he won't fall asleep because he's had so much to eat. Mr. Matt Oakley, how are you tonight?
Just fine. But I don't know how we can follow up that intro you got.
Right, exactly. Captain Kirk always says it best. And you, my dear friends, are about to hear the fantastic. Welcome to the program. It is the Graylian Report, our little dark corner of the web, where we bring you strange news and anomalies, anomalistics as they were, and of course, exopolitics from beyond the fringe. And when we get into the discussion of exopolitics, boy, do we ever have exopolitics to discuss tonight. You know, we've been teasing all week about this story that we're going to follow up with. We're not the first ones to break this story, but we're going to provide a little analysis regarding a very interesting situation that came together earlier this year regarding, now this is true, an NSA document that was actually released. Okay? An NSA document that was released earlier this year. And the situation with this was that although it does involve the actual mention of extraterrestrials and extraterrestrial intelligence, the potential for extraterrestrial intelligence, this I think is going to be a study in not just the potential for there to be extraterrestrial life out there, but this also is going to be a study in human behavior. We're going to dig into that tonight on the program. But before we get to that, I want to dive into a few other things. First of all, this is this story about the Federal Reserve that came out earlier this week. Anybody happen to see this one? About the Federal Reserve and secret loans? Get this. Okay, this was Bloomberg.com reported this. Secret Fed loans gave banks $13 billion. Not just in terms of actual bailout to help these big banks. There was actually some profit that was incurred as a result of this as well. Let me just dig into this for you here. The Federal Reserve and the big banks fought for more than 2 years to keep details of the largest bailout in U.S. history a secret. And now the rest of the world can see what it was missing. Well, we can see most of it. You know, you got to keep in mind, the minutes that are kept by the Fed aren't generally released to the public. You know, the Federal Reserve had their very first ever press release this year. And very conveniently, the same day that the press release actually came out, we now are, and I love this because I was contacting all my friends in talk radio. I was talking to them all about this, sending along information to them and saying, guys, I'm telling you, the Fed, Bernanke, they're going to be having a press release today. They're going to be talking about all this. It's going to be big news. And guess what? Guess what everybody chose to focus on instead? The fact that U.S. President Barack Obama released his birth certificate that day. Now, you know, and the whole debate, of course, you know, with that has to do with the fact that, well, you know, it wasn't an actual long-form birth certificate. It was a certificate of live birth and all this. Well, whatever it was or was not, I just find it very convenient that the same day, this having been a hot, contentious issue, the very same day that the Federal Reserve provides its first ever press conference, here we have the release of this birth certificate. So anyway, people's attention was conveniently kind of shuffled right along to the non-issue, and here we are with this information that was being released by the Federal Reserve that nobody paid attention to. So I hope you'll pay attention to me as I'm reading this to you now. The Federal Reserve and the big banks fought for more than 2 years to keep details of the largest bailout in U.S. history a secret. And now the rest of the world can see what it was missing. And here's what it was missing. The Fed didn't tell anyone which banks were in trouble so deep that they required a combined, get this is Bloomberg.com reporting, a combined $1.2 trillion on December 5th, 2008, their single neediest day. That was between all of the banks in need. A single day required $1.2 trillion in bailout from the Federal Reserve. You know, I guess these people just think money grows on trees, don't they? Bankers didn't mention that they took tens of billions of dollars in emergency loans at the same time that they were assuring investors their firms were indeed healthy. And no one calculated until now that banks reaped an estimated, now get this, $13 billion of income by taking advantage of the Fed's below market rates. Bloomberg Markets Magazine reported this in its January issue. Remember, we're a month ahead. We're not just time travelers here, folks. Saved by the bailout, bankers lobbied against government regulations, a job made easier by the Fed, which never disclosed the details of the rescue to lawmakers, even as Congress doled out more and more money and debated new rules aimed at preventing the next collapse. A fresh narrative of the financial crisis of 2007 to 2009 emerges from the 29,000 pages of Fed documents. Get this, they were obtained, of course, by Freedom of Information Act, just like those NSA documents we're going to be discussing later that have to do with extraterrestrial life. Now, while the Fed officials say that almost all of the loans were repaid and that there have actually been no losses, details do suggest taxpayers paid a hefty price. It was beyond dollars, as the secret funding helped preserve a broken status quo and enabled the biggest banks to grow even bigger. You know, I was reading Time Magazine this week, guys, and Joe Klein, in his column, he's been very, very outspoken lately, and he's been saying some very interesting things. You know, again, I don't even have to put out disclaimers. You know, take what I say for what it is, but I'll tell you, I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of guy. I like to call myself a middle-of-the-road kind of person. I don't like to go out there and start fights. I can see an argument to some degree. Okay, well, I'm a middle-of-the-road kind of person, but I see an argument more often typically on one side than the other. I think most people do to some degree, but nonetheless, I am still a person who I think is rooted in the center. You know, as long as I've been able to vote, I've been an independent, registered independent voter. Or unaffiliated, whatever you want to call it. And some states have different terms and jurisdictions and the like. But anyway, I am not a person who tries to overtly politicize these events. But what we do see is that when, for instance, and I think we've mentioned this on the program in the past, Bernie Sanders, who calls himself a socialist from Vermont, and then Ron Paul, a Republican from Texas, when these are the two individuals who are co-sponsoring legislation to audit the Fed and to try and find out what the hell those people, Ben Bernanke and the Fed governors, are doing with American taxpayer money. Now, granted, here's the thing. A lot of people are saying, oh, no, it's not the taxpayers. The Fed, they're able to print money. Again, I say, do you think that money grows on trees? When the Fed arbitrarily prints more and more and more money, what do you think happens? Chris, you got any ideas? What do you think happens when the Fed continues to print money like that?
Well, it becomes a situation like in pre-World War II Germany, when people were paying for a loaf of bread with wheelbarrows full of mark notes.
Exactly. And the reason why is because if you devalue currency by printing more and more of it, what happens is that you've got a certain amount of tangible wealth. But then when you create currency, currency isn't the actual wealth, folks. Currency, okay, Federal Reserve notes, look at a U.S. dollar bill. Okay, grab one, take it out of your wallet. I'm going to do it right now. Do this, if you're listening right now, do this along at home with me. Pull out a dollar bill. I've got one right here. And read, it says United States of America. At the bottom, right underneath old George Washington, it says $1. But at the top, what does it say right there? Everybody see that? Federal Reserve note. Okay, this U.S. dollar, this is representative of wealth. This is not actual wealth. Now, I can take a pie and I can cut a pie in half, but that doesn't mean I've got two pies. That means I've got two halves of one pie. And if I cut it into four, that doesn't mean I have four pies. That means I have four quarters of one pie.
You're just being a glasses half empty type guy now, Micah.
That sounds like heresy, actually, Micah. Your math makes no sense.
I'm talking crazy again, aren't I? Yeah. No, I'll tell you what.
If I cut a pie into four, then I've got four pies. They're tiny pies, but there's four of them.
Well, thank you, Woodrow Wilson. I appreciate that.
I mean, I know pie. If anyone in this room knows pie, it's me.
3.14 right. With all those numbers. Right? No, sorry, wrong, different kind of pie. I'm thinking numerically again, I guess. Look, here's the bottom line. If we have any kind of wealth, okay, let's say our wealth is backed by gold, but we keep printing dollars, more and more and more dollars, that doesn't mean that we have more and more and more wealth. That just means that the value of the dollar, what that dollar represents, diminishes continually. That's what's been happening when the Federal Reserve prints money arbitrarily. And furthermore, they monetize U.S. debt, put it on a securitization. You know, they literally dole this out to other countries who invest in our own debt, and then we're able to take that investment and put that back toward bailouts. That's where a lot of this bailout money comes from, securitizing government debt, utilizing foreign countries and their interest in U.S. debt. This is how the banking industry also profits off of loans on housing. And a lot of that, of course, well, we see where that went. We saw what happened to the housing market as a result of trying to issue all these loans, and then, of course, the government profiting off of them. But it's not just the government, that ubiquitous they that no one ever wants to mention by name. No, there's more to it than that. And right here we're seeing this, $13 billion of income. That's not bailout, let me tell you again, income, by taking advantage of the Fed's below market rates. This went to the largest banks. Now, the great thing about this, we're going to link this to the website, is that there is a little chart that you can see which banks profited the most and which ones actually got the most. This is determinable both in estimated income from the federal loans and then also total net income or losses. I'm looking at estimated income from Fed loans right now. Citigroup is the first one at $1.8 billion. Okay. Bank of America is number two at $1.5 billion. Royal Bank of Scotland Group, number three, $1.2 billion. I'm looking at number four, Wells Fargo. Now, they're not at a billion. They're at $878.2 million. But the point is you can see how much money continues to prop up these incredibly large banks. Now, Joe Klein in Time Magazine this week was talking about John Huntsman. He's one of these guys, you know, on the GOP side that nobody's paying attention to. But he's also one of the only potential candidates who has put forth a comprehensive plan that would try and limit the ability of these huge banks to continue to profit from bailouts and from stimulus. And not just that, but of course just to continue to benefit from circumstances that essentially are crushing everyone else. That's why we call it a recession. You know, this is absolute madness. And people wonder why the Federal Reserve conveniently keep their information to themselves. It's incredible indeed. But Sherrod Brown, who was quoted regarding this matter in the Bloomberg piece, he says, when you see the dollars the banks got, it's hard to make the case that these were successful institutions. And he says this is an issue that can unite the Tea Party and Occupy Wall Street. There are lawmakers in both parties who would change their votes now. And I think that that's a very revelatory statement. As opposed to playing this party politics and partisan attitudes, this Hegelian dialectic, you know, we're going to continue to fight with one another. Why don't we unite together and realize where all the real problems are, where all the money's going to, and the people who continually stake their claim on controlling the elements of prosperity in this country to their benefit and nobody else's, with complete and total abandon and disregard for anyone else. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Gray Alien Report. We'll get to the weird stuff when we come back, I promise.
I'm going to clue you into a show that I listen to every single week. It's Inception Radio with Jamie Hannigan. It airs Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Jamie always brings on new guests every single week on a variety of topics. UFOs, it's paranormal, it's time travel, conspiracy theory, it's everything. And Jamie covers it in depth. When this begins, Friday nights, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. I'll see you there.
As a parent, you can't help but look at your child and wonder what the future holds. You may dream about the possibility of your son or daughter becoming a professional athlete or a renowned heart surgeon. But while you're dreaming, consider this. The odds that your child will be diagnosed with autism are 1 in 110. Knowing the signs of autism and getting an early diagnosis could make a world of difference to your child and to you. To learn the signs, visit AutismSpeaks.org. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Gralian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Gralian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Okay, I've calmed down a little bit. A little bit. I'm feeling a little bit better. And like I said, we're going to get to some weird stuff here in a moment. But, it's important to talk about these kinds of things. You know, what was it John F. Kennedy had said literally a couple of weeks before he was assassinated? He believed that there was a plot to enslave every man, woman, and child in this country. And by his power as president, he hoped to try and undo that cabal of individuals who operated under many names. He would refer to the Gnomes of Zurich, all different kinds of things. I think he was essentially referring to wealthy globalist elitists who sought to control people and the interests of the people in monetary ways. And I'll tell you what, I just love the fact that there's an independent agency masquerading as a treasury in the United States that literally is able to manipulate our dollar, despite the fact that there's nothing backing it up anymore, by the way. They can manipulate our dollar, and they can do essentially with it as they please, and we never have to have any of the details about it. And even when we have congressmen and senators who are pushing for transparency, There's that word again, transparency. We have people like Bernie Sanders and like Ron Paul who are pushing for greater transparency. They aren't the only ones. You know, they were the ones who presented this legislation. But I mean, this legislation has been co-sponsored by a number of people and supported by dozens, okay, in the House and Senate. And what happened the morning, okay, that the audit, the Fed, they were looking for a full audit of the Federal Reserve. It got incredibly watered down. Why? Because the executive branch went to Bernie Sanders and said, listen, we can't allow this. Oh, really? Yes, we can't allow the American people to actually have transparency and to know anything about what our government institutions are doing with their dollars. Inflation, by the way, when I keep talking about people's dollars and taxpaying dollars, okay, inflation itself works a lot along the lines of a hidden tax. Because as inflation occurs and the dollar's value drops, okay, you'll notice that there will be all kinds of little economic byproducts of that, especially the increase of cost of goods and these sorts of things, because, well, and I don't want to get into an economics lesson here, but when you're being paid a certain amount at your job, okay, but the cost of goods continue to rise and the dollar's continuing to devalue, after a while you begin to notice that it's a little bit more difficult to make ends meet. We wonder why we are in a recession in this country. My God in heaven. Okay, moving on to something serious. Okay, anybody see this story about this super virus that's been cooked up in a laboratory? You know, the people who are involved in this project are asking if this thing ever should have been allowed. Okay, anything that would have allowed a super strain of influenza virus. Chris, have you seen this? Have you seen this yet?
Yes, I have, and it's just another example of science fiction predicting in advance what science actually will do. If anyone has read The Stand by Stephen King, that's about a super flu virus called Captain Trips that had a 99% fatality rate, leaving only 1% of the world to, you know, survive and try to make it from there. And then, you know, after the flu happened, then it gets kind of weird.
It gets messy.
With devils and nuclear bombs and the hand of God. But, you know, all the preamble, the super flu part happening was extremely terrifying for me because I knew it was plausible. And now I know that it's probable.
That, you know, it never amazes me. You know, the horrible things that people, you know, probably unbeknownst to any of us here, you know, even though we have an incredible intelligence network that operates here out of the bunker, there is stuff that even escapes us. And there's so much that's probably going on out there, I wouldn't want to know everything. But now, unfortunately, we feel that it is our solemn duty to alert our listenership to this one. Chris, why don't you go ahead and fill us in on this thing? Tell us a little bit about this.
All right. Well, the news so far is that a Dutch researcher has created a virus with the potential to kill half of the planet's population. That would be a 50% fatality rate.
Peachy. Great.
Yeah, how about that? Now research and experts in bioterrorism debate whether it's a good idea to publish the virus creation recipe. However, several voices argue that such a research should never have happened in the first place. Which, yes, it should never have happened in the first place, but it did. We can't go back. But who on God's green earth would want to publish the recipe? Like,
Wait a minute.
Kill half the population.
Wait a minute, hold on.
Let's put it on WikiLeaks.
Are they trying to do that?
They are thinking about it. They want to. The research group who basically modified this virus is wondering about the merits of putting it out, you know,
the merit
to the public.
The merit of putting this out to the public.
And I'm sure it's, I don't want to say guise, but it's, for lack of a better term, it's under the guise or the, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you'd been a different kind of, hey, guys.
The misguided notion that maybe putting the recipe out there will somehow serve to, they're too trusting. If they put it out there, I'm sure they're thinking that if somehow this happens naturally or a virus similar to this is engineered, the recipe to make it, you know, 50% fatality rate would help in reverse engineering a vaccine. However, you know, it's playing with fire. It's like we've always talked about, whether it be the singularity or gun laws or whatever. And it's not a matter of could we, but should we?
And that's what I started to say. And I mean, you know, that's a question that I know I've posed to you, Micah, more than several times in regards to a wide array of topics.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
And,
yeah.
And here's
including the singularity.
Here's the most terrible thing. The geneticist who was working on this, let me get his full name, I apologize.
This is Fouché, right?
Fouché, yes. I'm not sure of his first name, but Fouché and his team used a pair of ferrets for testing because they react in similar ways as humans when exposed to the flu virus. Okay. Researchers transmitted the deadly virus from one ferret to another in order to make the virus more adaptable to a new host. All right. After 10 generations, the virus has mutated, allowing it to spread through the air, which is what we all think of as, I'm coughing.
Mm-hmm.
And if I touch you, the germ that has come out of my body goes on to you.
Going viral the old way.
But that's not the case. I mean, I'm sure that is the case, but the more sinister part of this, the more terrifying part of this is you don't even have to cough or share bodily fluids. The result was that ferrets could get sick just by being near another infected animal.
So how exactly is this virus transmitted?
It's airborne to the point where it's exhaled when you breathe, not just when you cough or anything like that. And you know, any virus you've got that is airborne, you do exhale when you breathe, but not to the point where if you just are sitting breathing normally, someone's going to catch the flu.
Well, I'm seeing here it says that the study showed that there were 5 separate mutations that occurred, and they said that all of these essentially could have occurred in nature, but that not all 5 in one instance.
Well,
the individual mutations could have occurred.
It could have done in nature, but you've got to understand the strain that they're using H5N1, the avian flu, the one that once humans can get it will kill. It's not like, oh, the swine flu, it's gonna hurt people until we get a vaccine. This flu virus, this flu strain will kill the infected.
Oh God, you remember last? Oh, I'm sorry, Matt. Go ahead.
And I was gonna say this. All of this makes me think back to a book that I read that one of our field correspondents had given me years ago. Dakota had given me a book called Demon in the Freezer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that?
I haven't. No.
It's honestly, I can't remember the guy's name who wrote it right offhand, but it's all about the smallpox virus and how the United States doesn't house enough vaccine anywhere near enough vaccine for everybody in the United States. If there was, there was like a bio attack on the United States using a pox virus, a smallpox virus, and it would be absolutely devastating because guess what? All you people out there who got that smallpox vaccine so many years ago, it wears off.
Oh, wonderful. And that was Richard Preston, by the way, was the journalist who wrote the book, yeah.
And so that's what this whole thing is mimicking to me, except you know, people with a pox virus weren't dumb enough when the book was written to go ahead and publish the recipe.
Right.
You know,
or
to
mutate
make it a biological weapon.
Or to mutate it 5 times.
Well, actually, they had, in the book, they had done that, especially in a strain of mice, because the smallpox for mice, I believe, are the closest to human smallpox.
Uh-huh.
And they had infected an entire sewer population of mice by mutating the smallpox virus, and I think this was in Australia. I could be getting a couple details wrong, but generally the whole idea was that some scientists, they were having an overwhelming problem with rats and mice in the sewers and unleashed a mutated strain of smallpox on the rat and mice population.
And this
of
was
the
essentially
sewers.
To try and, I mean, as a pest control?
And it
control?
Eradicated them, every one of them.
Uh-huh, but...
And then basically the... Richard Preston, who wrote the book, was talking about, you know, this big, basically science fair, you know, for all the world's biggest, you know, scientists showing what they're working on. These guys brought it to the forefront of everybody's attention. Look, here's how we do it. Here's how we did it. Here's how we mutated this virus and killed millions of mice. And, you know, like I said, smallpox in mice very, very closely mimics that in humans.
It's interesting stuff. Well, I'll tell you, all I know is this. I remember there was a circumstance that occurred last, I think it was last year, where there was an outbreak of what they believed may have been influenza in the Ukraine, do you recall? But I mean, literally, there was something, there was a viral infection that was taking people and literally turning their respiratory system into jelly. I mean, I don't remember all the details. This was an incredibly, incredibly scary circumstance.
So it was like a kind of hemorrhagic influenza.
There was some sort of a strange circumstance where literally, I mean, it would set in like a typical cold. Okay, but then it would literally take down. Again, here's the thing about it, and this is why I know so little. I remember when it happened, there was a report. There were a few stories on some of these on some of the radio programs and things. I kept digging around on the web to try and find information because I thought something like this, you know, well, we would want to know more about this, and surely there will be some more news. And nothing ever came about. You know, all I remember was just this incredibly dangerous, potentially very dangerous strain of flu, and they were concerned, very, very concerned about it, you know, getting out of that general region in the Ukraine. And then we never heard anything else. And something else I have to say that also comes to mind that really is disconcerting. You remember the film 28 Days Later? Yeah, you remember that, you know, Rage.
The not-zombie movie?
The not-zombie movie. But, you know, the thing is, you know, the idea of something being cooked up in a laboratory like that and then literally taking on the world.
Well, you saw the beginning of 28 Days Later, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all PETA.
Ah.
We're going to let the monkeys go.
That's right.
Not knowing. I mean, it's admirable, and, you know, I don't agree with testing things on animals.
Oh, sure.
But, you know, if you're going to do something like that, you can't be an idiot to the point where I'm going to go into this medical testing facility where they're doing things to animals and just, you know, let them go.
Well, a bit of social, you know, social commentary was provided there, of course. But now, all that said, this story is disturbing. We will be following this.
Well, there's one more thing.
Well, go ahead. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
There's a quote in the story from Dr. Thomas Inglesby, a bioterrorism expert, who sums it up quite well in two sentences. It's just a bad idea for scientists to turn a lethal virus into a lethal and highly contagious virus. And it's a second bad idea for them to publish how they did it so others can copy it.
Oh, God, tell me about it. Yeah, and one word for you here, okay? Yeah, and this is I think, what anyone who hears this story, this is probably going to be what's on anyone else's mind. When it comes to biological warfare, I'm sorry, that's two words, actually. You know, oh, God, terrifying.
Well, that's the thing I was going to say, is that's mainly what that book, Demon in the Freezer, discusses, is the use, and it's not even the possibility of use, it's the fact that people are doing it, and they're doing it a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it's terrifying.
It's probably happening more than we know, so. But anyway, as terrifying as that is, we feel a certain obligation to allow our listeners to know that. Before we go to a break, I want to go ahead and get a little of this out. You know, we've been teasing not all week, but at least for the last several days, about, you know, an NSA document. Speaking of things that are kept from the general public, huh? Okay, there was an NSA document that was released in April of this year that seems to indicate that, well, humankind may have had contact with extraterrestrials. You know, for many, a recent We the People petition that was aimed at getting U.S. President Barack Obama and his administration and the U.S. government in general to acknowledge once and for all that extraterrestrial presences might actually be right here on Earth. Well, we know this one fell a little short of the long-sought disclosure that so many in UFO circles were hoping for. And the idea, of course, here was not only that Earth might have been visited already by neighbors from a distant star system, but that government organizations had probably been hiding this information from the public for years. But the thing is, as we've addressed already on the program here, I think that before we start jumping to conclusions about what exactly extraterrestrial life might be and whether or not UFOs represent that, if we're going to try and get information from the government, the first thing we need to ask about is, well, UFOs. Because whether or not UFOs are extraterrestrial is kind of jumping to a conclusion. Okay. Now, that said, it's one thing if asking for evidence of extraterrestrials yields no results. It's another thing, though, when, you know, documents based on Freedom of Information Act, requests, especially with regard to certain keywords, if these end up turning up hits that result in the release of certain kinds of documents and material that are declassified, or at very least released to the public, because not all these files, some files are withheld from the public, but they may have been, you know, they may have had an unclassified status to begin with, and then they're just subsequently released. That's the case with the discussion tonight, this particular NSA document. I discovered these, I think it was first tweeted to me by one of our listeners, who told me, you know, have you seen this? And there was a website that we've, you know, I've talked about on the program. I've even criticized them just a little bit before on the program. They're called Before It's News. The Before It's News website, I've noticed in many instances, have grabbed onto stories and have, you know, tended to put a lot of facts out there, you know, but not the full story. And it can tend to kind of give the impression of one thing or another. Well, in this instance, they were referencing a couple of documents that had been released in an NSA collection. And brief history, real quick, okay, about what exactly this entailed. Essentially, the Freedom of Information Act requests were able to obtain and clear for release a number of documents, I think back in 2004 or 2006, but they weren't released to the public immediately. And it literally took an Arizona lawyer filing a lawsuit against the NSA and winning before these documents would finally be released. And then they were published on the NSA's website. And you can go to the NSA.gov website and literally look, you know, through these files. There's an entire collection of files dealing with UFOs. Now, you know, I've referenced already in the past that the FBI has a similar portal, you know, titled Unexplained Phenomena, and they discuss everything from UFOs to, you know, I think they discuss cattle mutilations and, you know, a variety of other different kinds of things like that. Maybe the Kennedy assassination. I think that there's some information about the Kennedy assassination at the NSA site as well. Well, among these documents are a couple of rather curious ones, and they're titled Key to the Extraterrestrial Messages by H. Campaign, and then another called Extraterrestrial Intelligence by Howard H. Campaign. Now, looking at these two PDF documents, one will find a rather intriguing bit of information that appear to be, get this, references to a series of alien radio signals, okay, which presumably were recorded decades ago via satellite. Now, I was first reading this, and again, at the Before It's News website, I dug around and found a little mention of this on other websites and started thinking, is this real? I mean, is there any evidence to back this up? Well, sure enough, yeah. My search eventually led me to the actual NSA website where this information was posted right there for all to see. I downloaded the documents. I looked at them, and I'm thinking to myself, could this actually be the smoking gun that we've all been looking for so long? They apparently, the documents were published in an NSA technical journal. And sure enough, you know, they make references to a series of communications that had been collected, gathered via satellite, and this Campaign fella trying to essentially, he was a cryptologist who worked for the NSA, and he's essentially trying to decipher these messages. So I'm looking at this, and I'm thinking, you know, in the midst of all this stuff with the We the People thing going on, has there actually been evidence, at least available since April of this year, that already suggested that aliens might have contacted Earth, extraterrestrials, and that this was acknowledged by people who were cryptologists working for the NSA? Well, a lot of websites, a lot of blogs were billing this information as just that. And I was looking at this thinking, my gosh, there has got to be more to the story. Well, once you come back, you, my friends, will know the rest of the story, as the late Paul Harvey used to say, because we've done a little digging around. I've even been in touch with one of my clandestine contacts who provided some information about this. We'll tell you all about it when we come back right in a moment on this edition of the Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact,
Every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
By phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Featuring some of the music of Christopher Blake Germain tonight on the Graylian Report. That's his project, Tall Fields. In the last segment, we were discussing these NSA documents. Wait a minute, hold on. What is it? What is Red Pill Junkie saying in the chat room here? Old? Come on, they're not that old, brother. We're talking April when these things were first released. But of course, now here's the thing, and I'll go ahead and acknowledge this. A lot of people who are already up to speed on this, especially those who follow ufology as closely as RPJ or I do, already kind of know the resolution to this story. Okay, because as is usually the case, and that's the whole purpose I want to bring this to the argument here for to begin with, things aren't always as they seem. That's very much the case in this instance. So as we were talking about during the last segment, there was this NSA document. And again, I'd been interested in it because I'd noticed all these blogs. Now, I hadn't heard about it prior to probably in the last couple of days. I think it was a Graylian listener who had tweeted this to me. And of course, Twitter is one way that you can communicate with us. You can also contact us by phone, email, text message. We'll give all that out because this hour we're not going to take phone calls. We'll go ahead and open up the lines during hour two, during which we will also be joined by our good friend from the Church of Mabus radio program, Mr. Jeffrey Pritchett. But in the final minutes of this hour, I do want to go ahead and finish this story because it's very interesting nonetheless. You can imagine my excitement when I'm looking at a document that does appear to be relating extraterrestrial communication and NSA cryptologists' attempts at trying to decipher an alien message. I was pretty interested in this. I called Chris Hayes, our producer, and I said, Chris, my God, listen to this. This is incredible. And digging around on a number of blogs, people were interpreting it just as the very same thing. So I, of course, naturally began to dig around and look for information that could be found elsewhere pertaining to this story. And indeed, there was another article I found that actually described an IEEE conference on military electronics that was held in Washington, D.C. on the 23rd of September back in 1965, at which a Dr. Lambros Kalimejos, who was also a famous NSA cryptology expert, he'd numbered or authored a number of innovative studies all about deciphering coded messages. Well, anyway, he had been at this conference, and he had made a very interesting statement during this presentation he gave, and that was as follows. He says, as an illustration of how much information could be conveyed with a minimum of material, and as an example of facile inverse cryptography, let us consider a message I have devised to be typical of what we might expect, get this, from an initial communication from outer space. He was making references to having literally created a fake series of messages, the likes of which you might expect from an extraterrestrial civilization. And so I'm listening to this, or I'm reading this rather, because it was a transcript of this appearance, and I thought, huh, that's interesting. And sure enough, if you go back to the NSA website, there's an entire article titled Communication with Extraterrestrial Intelligence by none other than Lambros de Kalimejos, the very same guy who talked about this. And while it seems obvious to us right now, my friends, looking at this series of documents, what exactly was going on here? It was an exercise. And this individual by the name of Campaign, who ended up putting this series of documents out, deciphering this extraterrestrial message, well, he was using the initial series of transmissions, you know, air quotes going up here, that Dr. Kalimejos had put out in his thought exercise, we'll call it, and these were published in internal NSA scientific journals. But when taken out of context, I was amazed at how many in the blog sphere were out there literally writing about just one side of the story and not the other, and interpreting it as the smoking gun, my friends, proof, final proof, that we've been visited by extraterrestrials. Well, we hadn't been visited, but that we'd at least heard from them. E.T. had finally phoned home. But that wasn't the case. Not quite, at least. In fact, digging into this document a good bit, we can see Campaign doing a number of rather humorous things. For instance, one thing that he does is he... I loved this, too. He refers to a series of messages, the later messages of this group, I'm quoting him here, have the mysterious sequences A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, E, D, E, F, G, etc., ending with S, T, and V. I thought it was hilarious, of course, because he had a very dry sense of humor. He wasn't coming right out and saying the obvious, but he was poking fun at the fact that Kalimejos had actually included the human alphabet in the English alphabet, that is, in certain sequences of this cryptological exercise that he devised. And he summed the entire thing up by saying, looking back over the exercise, we see we have penetrated the meaning of the basic symbols and, even more important, have learned some of the syntax rules of the notation and have even caught mistakes in the process. The concepts used here are the basic ones of number, sets, and physical constants, which any cultures must share. How bizarre the syntax and values of a culture could be, I cannot conjecture, but any civilizations capable of sending a message across space must have things in common. In common, presumably, with us, too. And hence, he, of course, lets the cat out of the bag. He wouldn't have the absolute knowledge of what an extraterrestrial communication might sound like, and the very reason for that is because, well, we haven't heard one yet, at least to our knowledge. But it's interesting, nonetheless, to note that the NSA, back in the 1960s, at least a few cryptologists within the organization, took the idea of extraterrestrial communication seriously enough to organize thought games around it and try and solve one another's riddles. I wonder if people are still trying to do that, or if we still have our ears turned to the skies. When we come back, we'll have Jeffrey Pritchett. We'll be hearing from him right here on the Graylin Report. Alright guys, I know you've been putting it off. Your thirst for knowledge is incredible, insatiable, but your wallet says otherwise. So you haven't been able to subscribe to all those classy magazines out there bringing you to the edges of the fringe just like you and I do every week here on the Graylin Report. Well, good news for you. You can now subscribe to Intrepid Magazine for an entire year and just pay $19.95. Really? That's it? It's no joke. $19.95 will get you an entire year of incredible insight from authors like Nick Redfern, Scotty Roberts, and of course yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Visit www.intrepidmag.com today and feel your mind expanding tomorrow.
If this radio spot were Nikki Baker's life, it would start pretty normal, like this.
And about this far in, Nikki would drop out of high school.
Here, she'd be forced to work two jobs, but then she'd decide to earn her GED diploma.
It would be the beginning of a brighter future. For free info about GED test prep classes, call 1-877-38-YOUR-GED or visit yourged.org and begin your brighter future.
GED is a registered trademark of the American Council on Education, brought to you by Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath the Earth's surface, in the heart of terra firma, well, the heart of the hollow Earth, we're beneath terra firma. You know what I mean. You know who it is. It's the Graylian Report. Welcome back to the program. Another week of weirdness here on the show. We've been divulging all kinds of interesting information, including NSA documents and other goodies that seem to indicate, well, the unfathomable. And now, my friends, we're going to dish on some more information for you. In fact, this hour we're going to be hearing from none other than Jeffrey Pritchett of the Church of Mabus. Let's see here. One of our listeners text messaged us and wanted to know if this is the Graylian Report. Well, listener, if you're listening right now, I can tell you, yes, this is the Graylian Report. Fire away if you have a question. And if you, my friends, are interested in contacting us, we will have the phone lines open later this hour. If you'd like to send us a text message anytime, that number is 828-367-7201 to reach the program. You can also shoot us an email at info@graylianreport.com. Those are the ways that you'll want to contact us here at the program. Share your own insights. And then again, here in a moment, we'll be hearing some insights from Jeffrey Pritchett of the Church of Mabus. But first, I do want to say, you probably heard during the break, the wonderful discussion that involves one of our friendly sponsors, MDG New Media, and of course, La La Land Organics, raw chocolates. They're fantastic, and they make wonderful gifts for the holidays, folks. You might want to keep those in mind as the weather gets cold. You know, that's one reason we like broadcasting from deep within the hollow earth here on this program, because, you know, it maintains a constant temperature underground here. But on the surface world, it is snowing right now. And earlier today, I got a phone call from Jeffrey Pritchett who called. And, you know, I think he's down in the Florida area somewhere along the Gulf. And I told him, I said, man, it is snowing up here. I was above ground, actually getting a little daylight at that point. And I'm glad to say that I'm back underground now, and it's not quite so cold where we are at this moment, and we are joined, well, we should be joined here in a moment at very least, by Jeffrey Pritchett, who will be telling us some information about the Church of Mabus and a program. As a matter of fact, I should be going on his program this Saturday evening to discuss. Well, what are we going to be talking about? Jeffrey, are you with us?
I sure am, loud and clear.
Well, I thought that the secret government was trying to keep you from coming on the program. You know, that seems to always be what ends up happening between us. You know, we start talking about Mothman or something like that, and then we get cut off. So anyway, Jeff, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing all right. I'm duct taped to a chair by the men in black, and they're fixing me to put a chainsaw up my gooch.
Well, that's always comfortable. Now, what I want to know, and I got to put you on the spot and ask you live on the air. So what are we going to be talking about? I'm going to be a guest on your program this Saturday. You called me today to touch base, and I said, hey, why don't you come on my program tonight? And we'll do a quick blurb and everything. We'll talk a little bit about your program and give you some airtime. What are we going to be talking about on the show this Saturday?
Well, this Saturday it's going to be you and Jared Brocks about the alien experience, and basically we're going to discuss the alien experience from the recent study, I forget who did it, about the guy that said it's all in our brain, OBEs and all that stuff, that BS study, from religious experiences to spiritual experiences to actual encounters, to just the whole gamut. From you and Jared, it should be pretty interesting. He wrote a book on religious experiences and differences between religions. He's in the quantum physics, and of course with your intellect, it should be pretty fascinating.
Well, now I'll tell you this. Now, a flattery will get you everywhere, but now Jared, now tell us a little bit about his work. How does he come into all this? I was unaware of him prior to hearing that he would be joining us on the program this Saturday.
Basically, he's my web designer for the past 5 years for the churchofmavis.com, and he's been begging me to be on the show, so I finally let him.
Oh, so you're going to allow him some airtime. But his book actually, looks very interesting. And the subject matter, of course, will be very interesting with regard to, I think that's the question, is which researcher has now suggested that, alien abductions and the the perception thereof stems from the human mind. I mean, there have been so many people who've come out over the years and who've been saying things like that. And I don't think that conclusively we can really determine one way or another what exactly is happening. I don't know that I think that aliens, and I don't want to give away too much, because obviously your listeners are going to want to hear about this on Saturday, but I'll tell you this. I don't think that while alien abduction may be entirely physical, that it can be entirely something that is imaginary, too. I think a lot of it may take place in the mind, but who the hell knows? What if that's how aliens communicate with biological three-dimensional organisms? They project images of beings and encounters into our minds, and they actually could, influence us and communicate in that way. Who knows?
Exactly. I mean, I think that encounters happen that are on a physical level, and I also believe that they work with us on a dream state level, that some of them are aligned with the source, and they do interact with us in our dreams. I also believe that there are factions who maybe are not aligned with the source on some level. So, they work with us on many levels, and for negative experiences, perhaps, that could just be the way you view them, or there could actually be a faction that are, asshats.
Yeah, that's a good way of wording it, indeed. Well, now, have you, and this is kind of a personal question, but based on our own conversations, Jeffrey, I know that you're a host, and of course you read a lot, and, you feature people, fantastic guests. I have to say, you've got an excellent lineup of guests coming up. I'm going to ask you about that here in a moment. But first, when it comes to aliens and your own interest in aliens, what is it that draws you to this subject, makes you so interested in this? Have you had any personal encounters of your own?
Yes, I have. When I was, I believe the best way to summarize it, when I was 17, I had testicular cancer, and I went through chemotherapy. And shortly after that, my father passed away, and I got a divorce, and I kind of went insane and started studying the occult heavily, like Dr. Frankenstein, trying to figure out what the hell happened to me. And I believe on some level I attracted beings from another dimension, and that's what happened. And I have a weird story. When I was into chemotherapy, I was 17. I was dying. I had testicular cancer. I lost one. That made me cry. It spread to my stomach and lungs. And I was really in the comic books and like the Van Rice Vampire Chronicle books, and I latched onto those heavily. And I believe I found the universe or God during chemotherapy. I jokingly call it chemical crucifixion, which is kind of like an egotistical martyr complex, I'm sure. But I believe that's when I found God. And I actually prayed to be healed and to be a superhero. I was 17 and dying. And I was like, I was asking God to heal the pain in the world and to make me a superhero. So I think on some joking, you know, level, God took it serious.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, here, you little weasel, let me show you some stuff that isn't meant for mortal eyes. And I believe that's what happened on some level, because as I progressed into my 20s, I started having experiences with multiple witnesses, family, mother, sister, brother, nephew, and friends, and they agreed that something, I was attracting crap to the house. I've seen an assortment of different beings. I've seen beings of light. I've seen beings that are very serpentine-like and snake-like. I've never seen a gray alien in my entire life. Never. I don't know what that is. Everybody else sees those, apparently, but I've never seen a black-eyed gray alien. Now, in my mind's eye, I thought maybe, like in my, you know, the creative sense or something, I thought maybe they might have been around, but I don't know. But I've never seen one physical like you would see, you know, me or you or whatever.
Right.
And even the other ones I've seen were definitely from a different plane of existence, but I could see them. As far as the serpentines that I saw and beings of light, strange beings. I remember seeing a little fat man smiling at me, great, in my backyard on Bermuda Street. And it kind of reminded me of the Grinning Man story, but it was like a fat little Jabba.
Fat Jabba.
Yeah, it was like a fat little Jabba. I did see some beings in cloaks once standing around a box in the woods. They were very small. They were in hooded cloaks, and they were just standing around this weird little black box. And I don't know what the hell the little black box was, but I've definitely seen some things, but never the gray alien. I've never seen one.
But now these experiences of yours, when you've seen these kind of things, you know, have these been primarily in a dream sort of state, or have they been primarily in what you would call a sleep state, you know, or is it a mixture of both?
Waking consciousness, awake.
You're awake and you're aware.
Yes. I've seen them. I used to, back in my wilder days, I partook of psychedelics a lot, mushrooms and stuff. I've seen them on that, and I've seen them not on that. I've seen them on that with other people around me who were not on that, who saw them as well. So it was almost like I opened up a doorway and attracted it on some level. And then, like, there was an instance when I, in my wilder days, after my dad died, I went freaking crazy, like a little Al Capone. Little Al Capone, a little Scarface. And, you know, going to Marilyn Manson concerts and just something Metallica and all that crazy stuff, hanging out with dudes with mohawks and leather jackets and guns. And I remember at one point being pretty messed up, and my mom was at my house, and my mom doesn't do drugs, and I don't anymore. If I did any of that stuff now, I'd be, my fat butt would be in the emergency room. The only thing I would do now is pot and pills if I could find them. But that's a whole other show.
Well, yeah, that sounds like another program. Maybe your program. But you know, actually,
hey,
but
I'm in the wilderness. There ain't nothing here.
Well, hey, but, you know, that's what we love about you, Jeffrey. Though, you know, you're wide open. You're, you know, what you see is what you get, and certainly with your listenership, you know, what they hear is what they get on your program. And I do want to ask you real quick about that also. What are we looking at, you know, in the future? I know that you've got some awesome guests lined up for the Church of Mavis. And, you know, when it comes to the blog sphere and the podcasts and the web radio programs and things, you know, I think it's a little bit of a different culture than from terrestrial radio. You know, that's why I broadcast from a hole in the ground. You know, we tend to try and help one another out. You know, I've been on a lot of people's programs, you know, and I don't mind. I'm not, a stranger to having hosts of other programs on this program to come on and talk about their shows. We've had George Noy on the program, and of course you're on the program as well. Hell, I'd love to have Alex Jones on the program, but he likes to remain inaccessible. Who are you going to have on your program here in the coming weeks? I know you've got some great guests lined up.
Well, let me describe the December, and then I'll get into January.
Sure.
Basically, right now we're on UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We have about between 150,000 to 200,000 listeners. So we're on a network of 5 million people through Joe Montado. So when we do really good shows, you can tap into that, because there's a lot of good shows on that network. But if you have a certain guest, you can 5 million, which is nice. So it's always growing. Next Well, this Saturday, of course, is you and Jarrett. The next Saturday is my girlfriend, Carrie Boyer. She's a former client of Bud Hopkins. It's going to be her first appearance in, like, 10 years. She's been on Nova and the MTV Roswell documentary anniversary thing, and she was a client of Bud Hopkins. She's going to be on. And then our finale for the year is going to be Andy Colvin and Ted Torovich. We're going to be doing a Men in Black show. That's going to be the finale. Now, in January, I'm very excited because that's going to be, we're going to take a 2-week break. And then in January, we're going to start off with the Mad Martian, Gary, I can't say his last name, Lesserie or something like that. But he has some pretty compelling, bizarre, truthful, passionate things to say about Richard Hoagland. And let me tell you, it's one not to miss. It's definitely very fascinating. It's very strange and definitely it involves a code, involves a lot of treachery. It involves just, it's a mess. And it's coming out right now all over the place, and he's going to be our first show.
Wow.
And then after that is, I don't like Hoagland, by the way, so. I have a problem with him. I think as far as him, every space to breathe that comes up is, I think that's not good for society to say that everything that pops up, some anomaly, is some kind of spacecraft from another dimension that's here to usher in or whatever. I think after Hellbop, it's a very dangerous thing to do. And we believe on some level he's being fed a script. And that he's jumped the shark and kind of sold out on some level. But Gary's story is just amazing. He used to be his right-hand man. The guy slept over at his house.
Wow.
So it's definitely, that's how we're going to start off the year with that story. And then after that, Nick Redfern.
Now, who's he? Who's Nick Redfern? Just kidding.
Bald British guy that drinks freaking margaritas all the time.
He's world renowned for those margaritas, isn't he?
And then Greg Bishop, Adam Go Rightly, Angelia Joyner, Chase Blansky, and the two people you just hooked me up with for March. I just got both of those signed and packed it.
Fantastic.
Go and Maloney, I believe.
That's right.
His name right?
Yeah, Jim Maroney, Jim Maroney, I'm sorry, is one of the co-authors. Yeah, it's Mac that you're talking about that's going to be coming on the program next week. I've actually got Mac Maloney scheduled for next week here on the Gray Lane Report discussing his book, UFOs in Wartime. So, man, he is a real peach of a guy, and his book looks incredibly interesting. And, you know, there are so many good books that are coming out right now. So many authors have so much unique material that is coming out. You know, I just wonder what the next thing's going to be. You know, Jeff, when's your book going to be coming out?
You know, I'm actually just graduated college. I'm a late bloomer.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just graduated like this week, man. I'm on the president's list. I'm like breaking redneck gene pools throughout my entire family line.
Well, congratulations, sincerely.
Bachelor's in Communication Science, which is radio and entertainment, and my next step is to write a book. I'm kind of juggling around. I want to write a paranormal book about my experiences called Follow Your Weird, but I also enjoy horror, and I have an idea for these books called Smite Me. That title's not taken up yet. It kind of revolves around the alien black plague Grim Reaper scenario, if you've seen that or heard about it from William Bromley and Ancient Aliens and stuff.
I see. Well, and you said it's the idea would be what is it? Smite Thee, you said?
Smite Thee.
Smite Thee. Well, you are one who gets on the airwaves and smites them, and of course, paranormal topics every Saturday evening, of course. And that's going to be 10 p.m. Central Time for all of you who'd like to listen to the Church of Mabus. Now, of course, how do people find the website for the Church of Mabus so that they can listen live?
That'll be thechurchofmabus.com. That's the Church of M, as in monkey, ABUS.com. Also, I have a new blog up called thetricksters middlefinger.com. That's thetricksters middlefinger.com. And you'll find the article interview with the Mad Martian about Richard Hoagland. You'll find me talking smack about Andrew Bisago, about that Obama Mars. We went to Mars through a teleportation gate with 100,000 people and only 7,000 survived. So I basically use that blog to go after people that I feel that are untruthful. So the trickstersmiddlefinger.com is a new blog if you want to check that out as well.
I love that name, the Trickster's Middle Finger. Wow.
You do the math.
Oh, yeah, well, I tell you, I'm no good at math, but I tell you what, I think I'm a good judge of character, and that's why we always love hearing from you. Jeffrey Pritchett, thank you for joining us here on the Grayling Report, and I'll be talking to you soon, Muffin Man.
That's right. I got one more thing to say from Jack Nicholson.
Okay.
You go out there, Muffin Man, and you bang a little bit of beaver tonight. That's what you do.
Oh, gosh.
All right? All right?
We'll do it, Jack.
Never rub another man's rhubarb.
Oh, well, this guy could go all night. Ladies and gentlemen, Jeffrey Pritchett of the Church of Mavis. Jeff, thank you so much, bud.
Take care, brother. Bye, everybody.
Oh, yeah, thanks, man. Stay in touch, bud. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
He always gets me with that Jack Nicholson. Lord have mercy. Oh, you know, all types. It takes all types, John the Grayling Report. But, of course, he's a good friend. We invite him on the program. When we come back, more weird news, anomalistics, and God knows what from beyond the fringe. You just never know what you're going to get on this program. It is the Grayling Report, and I'm Micah Hanks. And, Chris, what have we got lined up for the next segment? What are we going to be talking about?
We've got the newest trend in alternate energy.
Oh, this is one, okay, this is one I want to hear a lot about and everything. If you want to send us a text message, the phone lines will be open for the duration of this hour, by the way, and you can reach us, well, we'll give all that information out when we come back. It is the Grayling Report. I'm Micah Hanks.
August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
This is the sound of a flat-screen television hurled off a building. Now the new bike your kid wants. These are the things you could have, all cast into oblivion. Because when you throw away money on wasted electricity, you throw away everything you could have bought with it. Use Energy Star light bulbs and appliances, and you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Saving energy saves you money. Learn more at energysavers.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
Users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Grayling Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grayling Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
And in case you missed it the first time, that call information again, those of you using phone, it'll be 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program at Grayling Report. That's our Skype handle. One word, G-R-A-L-I-E-N, report. And then finally, you can send us text messages, 828-367-7201. Speaking of text messages, we did just receive one. The many ways that you can reach the program, if you have questions, comments, insights that you'd like to share. I believe to have sighted a Bigfoot-like creature in some woods recently. Do they exist in western North Carolina, in my opinion? I do believe that I have heard stories, at very least, of strange creatures that have been seen in the western North Carolina area. And I'll tell you this. Years ago, I was actually involved in a series of visits to a location, a kind of a ranch out in, I guess it was near the Buncombe County, Madison County border. And there had been a story of some folks who had visited this particular property and had claimed to have seen a tall, long-haired, and when I say long-haired, not just having long hair on its head, I mean it was covered in long hair from head to toe. But there was a person-like creature standing there, leaning against a tree. And a good friend of mine, who I'm sure that many in the listening audience know, Joshua P. Warren, went to this location, and sure enough, on the very tree where this thing had allegedly been, they said that they found long, curly hair. And not only was I told that story, but Josh, a few years after the fact, showed me the hair. And he had sent that very hair to none other than Lauren Coleman of Cryptomundo.com and had said, you know, what can we do to, or he maybe, I don't know if he had sent the actual hair. I think he may have contacted Lauren and asked about it and said, can we have DNA analysis done with this hair? And Lauren had basically said that, you know, without the actual root of the hair attached to it, it would be very difficult to extract information about this and determine exactly what it was. And I'll tell you what it looked like to me. It looked like a long human hair to me. But who knows, maybe there was something more to it. There were a lot of stories from that area that had to do with these strange things. And I think on a recent program, we actually talked about a story that a man named Bruce Smith had told me years ago here in western North Carolina, where he had described actually seeing, something. Again, it looked like a human, he said, but it was covered in fur. And he said that it had these crooked, strange-looking hands and that it had been trying to get into a... Yeah, Chris is giving us an impersonation right now of this creature. I like that, Chris.
Are you doing the creep?
Chris is creeping all around the studio right now, yeah.
See, the question I have, though, is with the description of the hands alone, if he could hear whether whenever it moved, it sounded like dry twigs breaking. Because if so, that just stop. Because that is the lipstick-faced demon your friend saw.
The lipstick-faced demon. What exactly constitutes a lipstick-faced demon, Chris?
Well, it's a demon who rubs lipstick all over his face in an attempt to look more human, a misguided attempt.
Nobody likes one of those standing behind them.
No one likes one of those fellows standing behind them. That is correct.
Yeah, well, you know... Have you been...
For feet.
Are you... What? What are you talking about?
Two black holes for eyes.
I think Chris is having a religious experience. Maybe religious is the wrong expression for this, but anyway. But yes, I think actually we need to get the Reverend back in here now. Reverend Oakley, would you please exercise our producer?
I'll get to it after the show.
I'll exercise whenever the damn well I please.
One more reason I think that we need to, you know, we're in the midst of trying to upgrade several things here in the studio. The program's always growing and improving, and thanks to help by listeners like you, you know, we are closer, as always, to reaching those goals, you know, providing, and this is the thing that a lot of people... always get angry about when it comes to podcasts like this, is as soon as they start charging for, you know, a download, a lot of people think, oh, this seems entirely profitable. You know, you do a little podcast and you charge $1 per download, and if 500 people download it, well, you get $500. Simple as that, right? You know, nobody wants to have to pay for anything these days, you know, and I hate to kind of say this, you know, I'm not trying to attack the Occupy Wall Street by any means, but, you know, I think that certain factions, not all, but certain factions of the, you know, the so-called 99% probably literally do believe that it's just entirely unfair that that wealth is not just, you know, distributed equally among all people. Now, I'm not saying that it's great that, you know, I mean, I was taking the big banks to task during hour one tonight, you know, and, you know, I don't think that there's a problem. I don't think that you know, ingenuity and that entrepreneurship should be stifled. And if a person obtains their wealth, okay, I don't think that person should be penalized for being wealthy, especially if they worked hard to obtain it. Now, it's a little different if someone just, you know, is an heir to a large inheritance or something like that, and thereby that person, you know, being kind of born into money, utilizes that in less than savory ways to influence and control various aspects of society and government, you know. And we may not have direct proof of that kind of thing happening, but again, you know, I don't doubt that it does and that it is something that we have to deal with from time to time. But, you know, despite the merit that may be to groups like the Tea Party or to Occupy Wall Street, you know, I think that, you know, there are going to be people in any group that, you know, really probably would be happier if they had more just handed to them. That's just the simple truth. And I'm not speaking for everyone. I'm saying, again, there are some people out there, you know, there's a culture of entitlement. You know, I went on the Jeff Rentz radio program with my friend and mentor, Brad Steiger, one evening, and they'd had me on to talk about my book, Magic, Mysticism, and the Molecule. But what we ended up talking about was that very subject, because it was very near and dear to my heart at that time. Here in Asheville, literally days before I went on Rentz's program, there'd been a group of kids, self-proclaimed anarchists, who had run down one of the city streets here in Asheville, and they just decided to destroy a bunch of, you know, shop faces, the storefronts, on a number of shops in downtown Asheville. And their very reason for doing so was to basically thwart the disgusting bourgeois merchant class, you know. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know, they were upset, essentially, at what they perceived as people who were basically trying to be successful business people here in downtown Asheville, okay, and what they perceived as basically being kind of a yuppie, pseudo-upper class kind of, you know, faction. Now, I was looking at all these kids, and the majority of them were students at the, you know, the local college or UNCA, but a number of them were from outside the region. I wished I could have gone down to, you know, police headquarters, because many of them were actually apprehended and you know, held down at the county jail. And I wanted to go down and talk to them and say, you know, I'm sorry, I guess each of you work entirely, you know, that you're struggling, working probably two or three jobs to pay for your college tuition, because I know for a fact that your parents aren't paying for your college for you, or that student loans granted by government that you hate so much are paying your student loans for you so that you can have your education. You're all college students. I know for a fact.
Man, student loans are just a means to an end, man.
Well, the thing is that, you know, and that's the whole point, you know. Sorry, Chris. Well,
we're infiltrating, man, so we can take down the government after we milk it for all it's worth, man. Come on.
Well, yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah. Beat the system from within. And while you're going to college and using those student loans or the handouts that your parents have given you so that you can have the benefit, okay, of having an education in this society today, in this economic recession in which we exist right presently, you know, you can still go out there on the streets and you can destroy, you know, shop fronts and businesses and things like that and bitch and complain about people who are working for a living, unlike yourselves.
Well, see, here's the thing with these little anarchist morons. You know, anarchy as a philosophy is one thing.
Sure.
But when you give just a cursory, and you know, I don't want to blame it on the education system and the liberal arts college environment, but I mean, I'm going to have to, because I experienced it when I went to my liberal arts college. They give you, you know, a romanticized and really small soundbite version of whatever kind of philosophy you want to gravitate towards. So if it's anarchy, you get this really small romanticized version of it, and you think, yeah, man, I'm going to smash up windows and change the world, when really these little twerps have no foresight and don't think, okay, I'm going to smash these windows. I'm going to run around and break stuff that isn't mine. I'm going to put a lot of people through a lot of economic hardship, whether it's, you know, small or large, because they're going to have to repair their storefronts. Mm-hmm. Why am I not being taken seriously? Like, honestly, you're going to run around and break stuff like a little hoodlum, and you wonder why you're not being taken seriously. It's that action exactly. It's the romanticized not enough information on anarchy or communism or socialism or capitalism or any ism at all.
Sure, believe what you want to believe, but here's the bottom line. I think that
you gotta inform yourself.
Yeah, these kids lack perspective. And I'm not saying, again, you know, hey, if someone wants to prescribe to an anarchist philosophy, that may or may not be, you know, a good or bad thing. I mean, you know, I think that a lot of these things are relative, not necessarily in the Einsteinian sense, but the point is that, you know, you have to have some perspective. And when we have young people, like in that instance, and the whole reason I brought it up is because I was getting at this whole idea of a culture of entitlement. Let's rage against the machine, the big system that we hate, and the very system which was providing the education that was teaching them and influencing them and helping them to make the very decisions to destroy that they were engaging in, you know?
Well, and just you know, to give another point of view. I mean, you guys know how I grew up. I grew up with a whole hell of a lot of punk rock records. So for a long
time. You anarchist.
Yeah, for a long time, anarchy was the coolest thing ever. But there was, and I always equate it back to that flick, SLC Punk with Matt Lillard, mm-hmm. where there's just like this one moment that I had of clarity that it's like everything has to have a system. Mm-hmm. I have a system built into me. The world does too. We have to have systems.
We do require.
Yeah, you can't survive without some sort of systematic approach.
That's why
life.
We have society, because society, people helping one another and giving generously to one another and helping, you know, that is conducive to survival. And in that sense, yes, I mean, obviously, if you have great, you know, remember what Uncle Ben in Spider-Man said, with great power comes great responsibility. Many say that money is power. Sure, I'm with you. I think that if someone is endowed with a great fortune, whether or not they inherit that, or if they are, you know, fortunate enough to work their butt off and earn that money, if that person has that money, you know, I think that you're a better person if you give with what you have, you know, because you can't take it with you. That's the bottom line, you know. In this world, you know, we can do our good works, but you know what we don't, what we do in this work, you know, you don't even have to bring a religious argument to the table with in this regard. All I'm saying is that you can't take it with you. Okay, the money doesn't go with you after you die. And look at, you know, wasn't it Carnegie that gave, what was it, 90% of his fortune to national parks, the establishment of libraries, infrastructure, things like that. And, of course, the 10% that was left over for his family was more than they would need to be well off for the rest of their lives. But, you know, it is good if you are endowed with money, i.e. power, just, you know, now I will stop short of saying spread that around. It's one thing if a person chooses, and I would even say that, yes, people should choose to be good and engage in right action that is beneficial to society. But it's also against my personal philosophy to tell people when they should and should not be inclined to do that.
Yeah, they shouldn't be forced to do good. That's the whole thing. Like, that's my main gripe, like we were talking about last week with organized religion. You shouldn't have to be forced to do good, because if you're forced to do good and then you do good, you're not really doing good. Like, I do things that are right because they're right to do, not because I'm told to or because I'm afraid of what will happen if I don't.
Mm-hmm.
And it really almost doesn't count and isn't appreciated if it's not a genuine good
exactly.
act.
Exactly. I remember when, you know, Hillary Clinton was, you know, a potential back in 2008, and she was running. She was saying that she thought it would be a good idea that in exchange for, you know, some compensation toward education, that young people immediately out of high school should serve, you know, a year or two in public service, mandatory. And in exchange for that, you know, some of your college tuition would be covered. But, you know, see, again, I'm thinking, you know, do you really learn if you are made to do something? You know, how well do people, think about this one for a second. When you go to high school, how many people have you known that didn't do worth a flip in high school? They were flunkies, they failed everything. They get out, they work a job or two for a few years, and then they don't decide to go back to school, you know, until several years after they've graduated. They go to a technical community college or something like that. They enroll. They start off, you know, just taking basic, you know, requisite courses and things like that. They end up with a degree in something. They end up with a master's degree, then a PhD, because by God, when they were having to pay for their college, when they were having to pay their way, and they realized that, wow, what I learn now, okay, or what I don't learn, what I do or do not with this education, I'm the only one who has anything to lose, because everything at stake here is my own earnings and whether or not I make use of the knowledge to be gained as a result of putting money into this education. I know it was like that for me when I first enrolled in college. I thought, my gosh, you know, it's a lot different when I'm sitting here paying for it. My grades were much better. I learned a lot more. I retained that knowledge. You know, I would say that I didn't know that I wanted to be a writer. I didn't know I wanted to do anything but play guitar up until the time I graduated from high school. Then I joined the workforce. I worked for 2 years. I didn't go immediately to college. And when I did enroll in college, by Jove, I tell you, I had figured out within the first semester at community college, I'm going to be a writer. And you know what? I excelled at that. And you know what? I'll tell you what. I didn't end up getting an English degree. I didn't get a journalism degree. I didn't get a degree in mass media and broadcast and you know, communications. But I learned important life skills, and I made the decision that, yeah, we do sometimes have to be a part of a system, but life, we can sit around and we can bicker and complain about what we don't have. We can point the finger at others, or we can do for ourselves what needs to be done to survive and to do better. And we can take control for ourselves, and then we're better armed to discern, I think, intellectually especially, where the real injustices lie. And again, I'm not going to attack individuals, especially those who are successful and wealthy as a result of being successful and as a result of hard work that, you know, went into what they do. You know, they took risks. Remember Captain Kirk at the beginning of the first hour? You know, risk, gentlemen, is our business. And that's the truth. If you want to be successful, risk has to be your business. But the payoff in the end is if you take the risk and then you succeed, well, the payoff usually is tenfold. I'll never criticize a person for being successful. I'll never try and penalize a person for being successful. But when it comes to large banks, for instance, you know, that are literally profiteering off of bailouts that are coming, money that's just being handed to them, what's kind of a large-scale version of the exact same thing that we're always talking about, and the very thing that I brought up here on the program, a culture of entitlement. So I went on the Jeff Rentz program with Brad Steiger, and as opposed to talking about my book and about entheogenic molecules and altered states of consciousness, aliens, ghosts, UFOs, that kind of stuff, I talked about the culture of entitlement. I said, I'm disgusted, and I'm sorry, but right now I've got to have a minute to talk about this. And I just took another few minutes talking about it right now. And I appreciate the listenership of this program allowing us to have this soapbox. It's as much your soapbox, too. During the next segment, the phone lines will be open. 828-398-4886 if you'd like to call into the program, or Graylin Report to reach us on Skype. You can also send us a text message anytime at 828-367-7201. We'll be taking your calls here on the Graylin Report. I'm Micah Hanks. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Science Today, and the next caller is 9-year-old Philip.
Hi, well, I know the molecular formula for glucose, C6H12O6, and the general formula for an alkene is CnH2n plus 2, but I can't seem to find any scientific formula for Bob.
Bob?
My goldfish.
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. Brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
For most of us, chocolate is a guilty pleasure. Come on, admit it. You've got a sweet tooth just like the rest of us. But if I told you that eating chocolate was actually really good for your health and happiness, you'd probably say I was in La La Land. Hey, I wouldn't argue. Here's why. Every batch of the fine handcrafted chocolates at La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate is made from scratch, using organic, fair trade, and 100% natural ingredients. From the first bite, you'll know you're enjoying true quality, and the heart shape isn't the only way you'll feel the love. In fact, every chocolate from La La Land Organics is made by Melody Dawn Germain herself, and according to her own special recipe. You'll be enjoying Ecuadorian heirloom cacao in every bite, along with a selection of wholesome herbs and superfood supplements that not only make La La Land Organics delicious, but really good for your health and happiness. They're all natural, gluten-free, and no dairy, soy, or refined sugars are included, which help them boost your energy, reduce stress, and promote longevity. And as if healthy organic chocolates didn't remove the guilt factor enough, Melody ships all her orders in reusable, food-grade, non-BPA containers designed to eliminate toxic residue and cut down on environmental waste. Be sure and visit Melody's website at www.mdgnewmedia.com. That website again is mdgnewmedia.com. Just click chocolate in the toolbar at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And while you're there, you can see a full list of the ingredients that will be sure to put a smile on your face. And I promise, it's guilt-free. La La Land Organics Raw Chocolate. Why wait? That website again is mdgnewmedia.com.
We'll be right back.
high mountains of Appalachia. It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth where your ambassadors of the unexplained, Micah, Chris, and Matt. The Graylian Report. Hey, guys! It's Micah, Chris, and Matt! And we got a weird one here. Let's see here. Let's change gears now. I'll stop ranting again for the second time tonight. Boy, I just can't stop ranting tonight. I'm on a rant tonight. I'm on my soapbox. I'm on the pedestal. I can't get down. I'm just as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Micah, you've got to promise next time you go into rant, you've got to
go into Alex Jones.
No, I don't.
Go into Alex Jones. You got to think of these little anarchist twits, these little morons breaking people's windows and causing so much economic damage in a local area that they're.
And then suddenly he overloads the condenser and our entire system goes down. I have to turn on backup phantom power supply. You know, Chris, if you keep that up, we're gonna have to make it so that you sound like this all night. Go ahead, turn this.
What do you... Energy of the future.
Hey, Chris. Chris 1947 is joining us on the program again. Welcome back to the show, Chris.
Well, thank you so much, and bully to you.
Christopher, I mean, I'm sorry. I appreciate... Well, okay, that's enough of that. That's going to kill my ears if I let him keep talking like that. But anyway. Okay, well, let's see. What are we here? What was the next? You were gonna talk about something, Chris. Why don't I just toss it over to you? My mind's completely blown. You know, all this time travel, culture of entitlement, Federal Reserve, alien NSA, all this stuff. You know, people are gonna think I'm just a debunker. You know, they're gonna think I'm the ultimate skeptic because on this program, all I seem to ever do anymore is just talk about. You know, this is what you might think is going on, but I'm gonna tell you how it really is. You know, I don't mean to come across like a little smart aleck.
They're gonna think you're me.
Why do you think I focus on other things during the show? I mean, these minds are not going to sweep themselves on.
Yeah, swimsuit
computer.
Babes don't count, though, Matt. Those don't count. I'm kidding. Matt's got enough to do back there, let alone have to try and come up with something intelligent to say, which he manages to do both at each week. If we all had Matt Oakley's talent, well...
At least twice.
At least, tops! Twice a week.
He's not going to get drunk on ideas over here.
Yeah, he is going to be high on life, actually. I think, you know, it's kind of like, what was the computer in Robert Heinlein's novel, The Moon is a Harsh Mistress. You know, they said that if you feed enough channels of information into that computer, it eventually wakes up. Well, as an engineer, Matt's working on so much stuff back there that he literally could almost constitute sentient artificial intelligence unto himself by virtue of all the things he has to do. He would probably be better off if he were Cthulhu and he had a bunch of tentacles so that he could have, you know, an extra set of arms to work all those buttons and levers.
Plus, then he'd be able to punch you in the taint.
Well, yes, that would be helpful.
All that in a bottle of wine.
Hey, watch your language, okay? It's not even safe harbor over here on the East Coast, let alone Central Time, but, or Mountain Time, or West Coast Time.
But it's the internet. It's all safe harbor.
Well, yeah, it is, but we have certain standards we like to keep. Well, what if the little Hadle, yeah. What if the little Hadle, the Hadle children, okay, outside the bunker here, what if they heard you talking like that? Well, first of all, they wouldn't speak your language, probably, but...
Well, we all know by now how I deal with Hadle children.
No, we don't. And that's unconfirmed. And you're advised... Yeah, never mind. Anyway.
We're not at the bar, Chris.
This is the no-spin zone.
You're starting to sound like Herman Cain, man. I did not have anything to do with those Hadle children. I didn't eat them.
But, no, I did.
You... Chris!
What? No. During my candidacy and during my campaign for president, I will not tell one single lie. I will tell the truth no matter what.
So you come right out and admit that you kidnapped and ate a potato baby.
Yes.
Oh, God. That is sick.
Are you going to be honest if people ask you about like stuff I did, too?
Well, people are probably actually wondering.
No one will ask what you did because you're not going to be my vice president.
Well, I didn't ask to be. I'm just you know, the fact that you were associated with people.
And you know
like
what?
Us.
I will tell... Everyone, any story that I have about Matthew Oakley, specifically one that happened 2 weeks ago.
Okay, well, no, but first, don't. Why don't you tell us this story that you've got pulled up here? Because this sounds more interesting than whether or not you've eaten Hadle flesh before.
There's nothing more interesting than that, Micah, but...
You're a zombie. You've probably eaten human flesh more than once, but that said, go ahead.
But let's all take a look at the new fad of alternative energy. Bringing new meaning to the term body heat, a UK crematorium is hoping to make some extra cash by selling energy produced during the cremation process.
Oh, God. I didn't think this conversation could go any lower.
Well, Micah, if you want to, you know, stop being, you know... A
prude.
A prude, yes, a prude. A Philistine, even, and just okay. Listen and think of... Just think logically about what happens during the cremation process, all right? And then your questions and your fears will be answered and discredited.
All right. Hey, you've convinced me. The floor is yours. Go ahead. Okay. Go ahead. It's all you.
All right. If all goes as planned, the Durham Crematorium will install turbines in two of its burners and sell the excess energy to Great Britain's national grid, the Telegraph reports. A third burner will continue to warm the site's chapel and offices. Engineers estimate that each turbine can generate around 250 kilowatt hours, enough electricity to power 1,500 televisions.
That's okay, a lot of TVs.
And, well, yeah, but while the proposition may seem a bit morbid, if you think about it, when you burn anything but a body specifically, the crematorium insists that most of the energy will come from gas used during the cremation process, with negligible amount coming from the actual bodies. So all this energy is just created by the heat, and the gas is generated from a fire itself, and they're capturing that energy as it escapes to power the turbine.
Well, that's not such a bad idea, is it?
No, and actually, if you want to get into it, my brother in Colorado is investigating all sorts of alternative energies, and he's found a way. There's a kit you can buy, for lack of a better word, the whirly bird vents that go on top of your house to let the heat escape from your attic. You can retrofit those with electromagnets, and anytime they move, they'll generate energy, and you can then route that back into your house.
Huh. That is that sounds delightful. But you know, but the one thing I can't shake is, and this is the truth, the one thing I can't shake is this old adage that comes to mind. Do you remember? It went something like this: Soylent Green is people. I don't know. I'm sorry. I know that probably is entirely unrelated, but it sprang to mind. Maybe it's because I've been hearing all these classic sound bites, William Shatner and this and that, maybe a little Charlton Heston too. And when we come back, you'll get to hear, well, my rambling. The Mouth of the South, I'm Micah Hanks. It's Graylian Report. We'll be back right after this.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have sent children into fits of rage.
I am responsible for a child's speech impediment.
I am the reason a child can't read.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Micah Hanks of the Graylian Report here. I just wanted to take a minute, well, really just 30 seconds, to tell you a little about a wonderful project I'm privileged to be a part of these days. It's called Intrepid Magazine. Intrepid is an eclectic melting pot of a variety of different areas of interest, ranging from politics and fringe science to mysteries of the unexplained. You'll hear from authors like Nick Redfern, April Slaughter, Marie D. Jones, and Larry Flaxman, editor and publisher Scotty Roberts, and, of course, yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Period. Subscribe today. Visit www.intrepidmag.com.
The 9/11 memorial is for the 343 firefighters who didn't make it.
For my husband who died that day.
And the first responders who saved my life.
Because the best of humanity can overcome the worst hate.
This is Robert De Niro. This year, as we open the 9/11 memorial in New York City, we ask that you join us to honor, remember, and reunite. To learn more or to reserve your visit, go to 911memorial.org.
Brought to you by the 9/11 Memorial and the Ad Council.
We'll be right back.
Graylian Report. The unusual, weird news, anomalies, exopolitics. It's Beyond the Fringe, where conspiracy theory can become conspiracy fact. This is the Graylian Report with your host, Micah Hanks.
From hundreds of miles beneath terra firma in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks, the mouth of the south, and you've locked in. It's the Graylian Report. Joined in studio by producer Chris Hayes, my fantastic co-host, and the other guy back there, the Reverend. I'm just kidding. Come on, man. Matt Oakley, the man who makes the program sound as good as it does. The guy who tries to crack up the host while he's doing his show and make it more difficult for me to do my job. Matt, thank you for keeping me on my toes.
Anytime, man. That's kind of... Well, it's not really what I'm here for, but, you know, I figured it'd be a good job to give myself, you know?
I'm going to give you a top 10 real quick. I'm going to give you to the count of 10 to quit that. Just kidding. Oh, just kidding. Come on now.
Put a lid on it.
Hey, would you put a lid on it? I'm trying to talk here. No, seriously. Because, friends, it is the final hour of this week's program, and our time with you is drawing very nigh. Look, I'm getting serious. Would you stop that? Thank you. Like,
sorry.
Our time is getting really serious right now. Here's the thing. We are about to run out of time, folks. We are about, truly, I'm really beginning to get concerned. I'm not just talking about this hour of the program. Okay? I mean, I'm serious. I think things could be looking really bad. I mean, I'm talking 2012. Did you see this? There was a story this week that there was another prediction. Another prediction. Regarding the Mayan calendar, a 2012 doomsday.
Does it involve us all getting prehensile tails?
No, it doesn't.
Because if not, I'm really not interested in hearing it.
No, it doesn't. Well, I don't know if it's really another prediction. What it is that there was another relic that was found, okay, that points to the alleged 2012 doomsday. The website was the International Business Times, reporting that Mexican archaeologists have acknowledged a discovery of a second reference to a 2012 apocalypse in a carved fragment found at a southern Mayan ruin site, but downplayed the predicted end of the world scenario next year as nothing but a Western interpretation. The National Institute of Anthropology and History said in a statement that the date of the apocalypse has been found in a carved or molded face of a brick in the Colmacalo ruin in the southern part of the country. it's Colmacalco. The only surviving reference to the 2012 date is found in a stone tablet from the Torguero site in the state of Tabasco. Now, the Comalcalco... I can never do this! Comalcalco brick has been found years ago. It had been analyzed thoroughly at the time. It is now being kept in storage at the Institute. The Torguero and the Comalcalco... Oh, where's my Latin American linguist when I need him? The inscriptions are estimated to be around 1,300 years old. Now, the 2012 predicted apocalypse date has been the subject of intense debate among archaeologists and, of course, these alleged doomsday theorists. You know, Daniel Pinchbeck even wrote a book called 2012, The Return of Quetzalcoatl. I think Whitley Strieber actually wrote a book called 2012 as well. And then there have been numerous theorists who, as opposed to taking the kind of paradigm shift approach that people like myself and Intrepid magazine publisher Scotty Roberts takes. The reason I bring him up is, of course, because in 2012, Scotty and I are planning on doing a conference in Texas that will probably be kind of themed around the idea of the paradigm shift that many are hoping for in 2012.
Wait, hang on. Scotty and who? Scotty and just you.
Scotty and
right?
me.
No,
Scotty and...
No matter, Chris. No,
It's actually Intrepid Magazine and the Graylian Report.
Okay, yeah.
So technically, I guess you guys fall under that jurisdiction.
Yeah. Oh, technicalities.
Does
that mean we have to pay for tickets too or something?
Yeah, you guys are paying your own way. I'm not going to pay for y'all's tickets. Come on.
Oh, so...
Ain't going to happen!
So, what you're saying is press credentials are worthless now.
Why do you have to have press good?
I didn't get these laminated for no reason. Do you know how hard it is to laminate something? I mean, not really, but...
Oh, it's real hard when Holly does all that stuff for us. A-derp-a-derp-a-derp.
You know what?
What?
You know what?
I don't know who you're working for.
Holly gives me such a ration of stuff. Every time I ask her to laminate the simplest thing, she always wants to know, why do you need this baseball card laminated? Who cares about your grandmother's recipe? Why?
Well,
And you know, I just wish she would do what we paid her to do, which is what we tell her to do.
So we're paying Holly to laminate your grandma's recipes? Hold on now. Wait a minute. What are you doing on company time here, buddy?
Laminating my grandma's recipes.
Oh, gosh. Well,
it's the recipe for the chicken and the wine we've had.
Oh, really?
So if you don't want that anymore, if you don't want things like that preserved forever, then, well, quite frankly, I'm okay with it. I don't have to slay.
If you're okay with water stains on your recipes, Micah.
You know what? plastic is not biodegradable, and that's good because now that recipe will live forever.
Ever. Can we get the, where's the
echo?
The echo effect. Matt, can you find the echo effect? Forever, ever, ever. I want the cone of silence again. That's always a good one. But anyway, okay, anyway, point being, though, these Mayan predictions about 2012, the Mayans have used several calendars in their longest period calendar. The long count started at the end of the world theory. So this was kind of the one that served as the impetus for these theories. The long count calendar was used by the Maya to document dates beyond 52 years. It began in 3114 BC and marked time in 394-year time periods known as Baktuns. The 13th Baktun ended around December 21st, 2012. Nowhere did the Maya actually say that the world was just going to end by the 13th Baktun. It was just a special future anniversary because the number 13 was a sacred number for the Mayans. The Tortuguero inscription attracted so much attention because it describes something that will occur in 2012 involving the Mayan god associated with war and creation. The stone is badly eroded and the glyph can be read as saying, "He will descend from the sky." Very interesting. He will descend from the sky. The Institute of Archaeology and History reiterated on Thursday that Western messianic thought has twisted the cosmovision of ancient civilizations like the Maya. But the thing is that I would say maybe not just a messianic, a Judeo-Christian interpretation of he who has ascended will descend from the sky. But what else would many people perceive to be descending from the sky? You know that there are probably, we talked about the aliens of the program recently, but there are some people who, for them, the idea of extraterrestrial intervention with humankind is in itself a religious interpretation. You know, it is a spirituality. And there are going to be people who are going to read, "He will descend from the sky." I bet you know that there are doomsday cults out there that are prescribing to this kind of thing right this minute.
Yeah, I foresee a rash of mass suicides and...
Don't drink the Kool-Aid.
We thought Y2K. Remember Y2K? The year 2000? The computers are going to shut down. I remember Y2K preparedness kits.
Yeah.
You know, you remember those? Y2K preparedness. And now, look at what we're dealing with. You know, we're looking at... Literally, in 2012, he will descend from the sky, the god of war and creation. Who knows?
Well, you know what Giorgio Tsoukalos thinks about this.
What does Giorgio think? Are you being serious?
Yeah, no, I'm being serious. He's of the opinion, much like with Y2K, that absolutely nothing will happen, and he finds it silly that anyone in this day and age can believe that something will happen as far as the world ending, and I'm with him as far as that. I know the world's not going to end in 2012, but there are signs, scientific signs, pointing to the fact that there's going to be a lot of abnormal solar and astronomical activity.
Brother, that's what's got me worried. That right there is what's got me worried. Look, NASA has talked about this. You know, NOAA has talked about this. The potential for near catastrophic coronal mass ejections, you know, the resulting electromagnetic pulse type effect that could happen when the Earth's geomagnetic field is bombarded by solar irradiation of such a magnitude that it literally could shut down the electrical infrastructure in parts of the world.
And then you know what's going to happen?
What's going to happen then? People are going to eat each other.
No, Canton's going to, or not Canton, I'm sorry. Black Mountain's going to shut off the water, and Asheville's not going to have any.
Exactly. Yeah, sounds like we've read the same books.
I'm going to go ahead and throw a credit of that out to Dr. Bill Forstchen.
Bill Forstchen, you know, I've tried to get Bill on the show. I was looking through my emails the other day, and from last November, literally, I had an email from Bill Forstchen from last November thanking me. I'd forgotten all about this. He was thanking me for inviting him to come on the program And he was headed off, he spends a lot of time traveling, and he was headed off to Russia at the time. But you got to keep in mind also that, although I've been in touch with Bill at least probably as recently as 2 or 3 months ago, you know, it's an election year coming up, and Bill has co-authored and happens to be very good friends with one of the potentials right now. In fact, I'll tell you who it is. It's Newt Gingrich. There's really no point in trying to even hide that. I've got some books that have been co-authored by Bill and Newt. And, I think probably, if anything, right now Bill Forstchen is in a situation where he has to be careful what radio programs he chooses to do and what subjects he chooses to address, because of the fact that, you know, he's got a potential front runner right now who happens to be a big buddy of his and also a co-author of many of his books. They wrote, what were all the books that Bill and... You know, actually, Newt Gingrich actually wrote the foreword for 1 Second After. Do you remember that?
I never read forewords. I'm sorry.
Well, you should, you know. Well, I won't ask you to write the foreword to any of my books.
What, man, forewords are just ways of hyping the author. It's
sorry, our engineer just exploded. Our engineer just exploded.
Just
I was going to ask
puff
him.
Of feathers.
There are guts and bone bits all over the studio.
Well, I was actually going to ask Matt to write the foreword for my next book, but you know he exploded, and you don't like forewords, so.
Oh no! I'll write one.
Who out there? Who? Anybody in the listening audience interested in penning a foreword for one of my books? Somebody want to write a foreword for one? You know, I'll have to figure out what book I'm going to write first.
I think you should get the creator of the wormhole, Brian, to write your foreword.
I'm sure he would probably like to write a foreword. I've dedicated books to that guy, but I don't know.
This book, I'm writing this book on behalf of Micah Hansk.
Oh boy. Well, it won't matter anyway, because in 2012, when that book would have been published, the book wouldn't. Never mind. The world's going to end, so
it doesn't matter. We're signing off. Good night.
And that brings us to the end of the program. No. I bet a bunch of people were like, what? What? That was quick. Yeah. It's interesting. No, I'll tell you, I'm not one of the ones who thinks that the world's going to end. I think it's interesting, though, that there is a secondary reference to, but they're not talking about the world ending. Again, I think that, if anything, what they're talking about is, in terms of there being a messianic interpretation of all this, the notion that when he, being the great he in the Judeo-Christian tradition, when he comes again, it means the end times, the rapture, you know?
Is that like he who is called I am?
Yes. When we're talking about the big J coming back, okay? In the Christian tradition, you know, it is believed that, you know, when Jesus returns, that he will be returning to gather the faithful, and that we will basically, you know, be undergoing a rapture, so a homecoming of sorts.
Now you're talking like that. You're talking about, you know, the rapture and the big J coming back, and we've previously spoken about the singularity, the melding of man and machine. Basically, now our listeners probably think we're advocating getting the mark of the devil.
Well, no, certainly not. You know, I try to be, well, I'm not even going to get into that. Because, you know, first of all, if we wanted to get scriptural about it, and this is something I don't do a whole lot, what is the scripture that reads, no man knoweth, not even the Son, in terms of, you know, when the end times should come? So when it comes to people wanting to speculate about the big end, you know, I'll speculate all day on scientific interpretation of data that suggests that there is a potential for cataclysmic earth changes and solar irradiation that could result in, you know, breakdown of the electrical infrastructure. That kind of thing I'll speculate about all day. But when it comes to, you know, end of the world and rapture and things like that, it's not something I go around worrying about for a multitude of reasons. One of them being that I don't think that anyone is going to be able to crack some sort of an ancient code that is going to, give us some sort of insight into when the end times should be expected. And I certainly don't think that 2012... is any time that we can expect the end of the world. Hey, there's that theme music that we had Matt cut off at the beginning of the hour.
I'm bringing it back.
Thanks, buddy. I know. He's bringing back the magic. Matt Oakley back there pushing all the right buttons. Along with producer Chris Hayes and, well, yours truly, the mouth of the South, who's running his mouth a good bit tonight. It is the Grayling Report. When we come back, we'll be discussing more weird news, strange stuff, and, well, you know, what else. You'll hear it all here on the Grayling Report.
Yeah. Carl Sagan once wrote that the questioning mind needs to be instilled with both skepticism and wonder, for the universe is a pretty big place, filled with undelved mysteries, sciences, and life that we've barely begun to comprehend. Every month, Intrepid Magazine brings you both the wondrous and the skeptical. Intrepid Magazine focuses on science, metaphysics, UFOs, politics, conspiracies, and unexplained phenomena, all offered up by Intrepid's cadre of writers and contributors, comprised of a host of seasoned authors, pundits, and recognized names in their fields. The universe is indeed a big place, and where other magazines leave off, Intrepid Mag is just beginning. Subscribe to Intrepid Magazine today at www.intrepidmag.com. That's www.intrepidmag.com.
Want to have some fun? Maybe get a little bit of insight. Get a lay of the land. Want to know what's really going on? Do what I do. Listen to Future Theater. It airs every Saturday, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, on the InceptionRadioNetwork.com. We'll see you there.
It's the Graylian Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Graylian Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Graylian Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
This is the Iceman. Welcome back to the program. That was my old moniker back in the day when I was doing weather radio. The Iceman and the Aqua Kitten. Where's my Aqua Kitten now? Who knows? Probably out in the West Coast with flowers in her hair someplace. Yeah, back in the crime-fighting days. We were watchmen. We were young. We were wild. We were crazy back then. We had something to live for.
Would you say that you owned the sky?
I did own the sky, damn it. Yes, yes, yes. We owned the airwaves, at very least, doing weather radio. And then, you know, in a couple of years here, they're going to do a Where Are They Now? And they're going to be talking about Micah Hanks lost his tan, moved underground, and broadcasts weekly from a bunker in the hollow earth. And the Aqua Kitten, meanwhile, well...
is living it up.
Living it up somewhere, probably in Costa Rica, for all I know, or Los Angeles, or someplace like that. But... I digress. Welcome back to the Graylian Report. I'm Micah Hanks, getting into my sordid history. Thank goodness we're no longer in witness protection here, friends. You know, this week on the program, we feel that it is our obligation to you know, address certain issues that could be of potential danger to the listenership. And hold on now, producer.
Didn't you tell me this?
Because I was going to address it on the program.
Before the show.
Well, you
could have at least warned me. I have special underwear.
We were doing show prep, but you were also cooking chicken. Okay. You were cooking chicken, and Holly had already gone home, and it was just the three of us for the late shift. Okay, because there is an actual 9-to-5 faction of this operation that does the whole upstairs gig during the daytime, and then, anyway.
They have special underwear?
No, I don't know if they have
special
underwear.
Then you should have told me.
Okay, well, we'll be sure and get everyone special underwear, because the point is...
Get special underwear, guys.
Now, look, nobody's going to know what the hell you're talking about if you don't let me finish reading the story, producer Chris Hayes. Sorry, producer extraordinaire. Anyway, laptop Wi-Fi has been said to nuke sperm, but caveats abound. I'm reading the headline as written, folks. We couldn't make this stuff up. This was reported this week by Reuters. that the digital age. You listen to you, you sick, little zombos.
No, when you say it nukes sperm, I just imagine small, like little mushroom clouds going off.
Nuclear sperm. Why am I the only one not laughing?
So now Matt and I are now fat man and little boy.
Oh, that's pretty good, Chris. That's pretty good. Okay, anyway, well, that said, since this is a web radio program, we felt that it was our obligation to share, you know, consumer health information with the listenership. And indeed, the story in a report in a venerable medical journal, Fertility and Sterility, Argentinian scientists describe how they have basically taken semen samples from 29 healthy men, placed a few drops under a laptop connected to the internet via Wi-Fi, and then they hit download. 4 hours later, they say that the samples were done. They were goners. A quarter of the sperm were no longer swimming around, for instance, compared to just 14% from samples stored at the same temperature that were kept away from the computer in question. And 9% of the sperm samples showed DNA damage, threefold more than the comparison samples. The culprit? Electromagnetic radiation generated during wireless communication, says Conrado Avendano of Nascentis Medicina Reproductiva in Cordoba. Red Pill Junkie, I know you're listening right now. Yes, I'll take you up on the offer. I need Spanish lessons.
He needs Spanish lessons. He has no idea how to roll his R's.
Cordoba? Conrado Evendano of Mastis.
Micah, send me the link. Would you like me to read the Spanish for you?
No. Then we'll get entirely overindulgent. But the point is that the data suggests that the use of a laptop computer wirelessly connected to the internet and then positioned near the male reproductive organs may decrease human sperm quality. At present, we do not know whether this effect is induced by all laptop computers connected to Wi-Fi or, you know, what conditions may heighten this effect. If certain computers do it more than others, certain kinds of Wi-Fi connections, certain kinds of environment, who knows? You know, I would argue that probably, you know, underground like we are, that we're probably a little bit safer.
I don't know, man. You know, you already know I'm working at half capacity. You owe it to me to tell me these kinds of things.
I guess so. I guess I do. By the way, from the text message front, you know, with our text messages are blowing up tonight. Someone texts us and says, you guys need to get your camera working. And indeed, we will hope to do that in the next few weeks. You know, that's something that brings something to mind, by the way. In an effort to try and improve the quality of this program, you know, I've got a fantastic 1080i HD. What is this? It's a 720p HD webcam. But the thing is that right now we are still providing our stream through Ustream. Now, in the very near future, what we plan to do is we plan to migrate the stream that feeds this program live. Our big listenership, we get literally, let me tell you folks, thousands. My jaw dropped the other day. Here it is, November 29th, and I showed you guys before the program tonight exactly how many downloads we've gotten. I'll just tell you, folks, we are getting thousands and thousands of downloads a month, and the program is growing. The program is growing tremendously every month. We cannot thank you enough. The majority, however, of the listenership is in the downloads, and the reason for that is that, you know, there is, as I've always said on this program, there's such a demand for listener on demand interactivity, you know, the ability to take something and listen to it, you know, when you want to in your car, or, you know, when you're going out jogging, or if you're on the plane, or if you're on the train, you know, any kind of automobile for that matter. People want to be able to take, you know, audio with them and listen to it. And therefore the live program, doesn't get near the listenership that the downloads that, you know, subsequent to the broadcast get. And part of the reason for that is because we have an international audience. You know, when I say greatly an international, I'm not kidding. You know, although our greatest listenership is here in the United States, we have listeners in Mexico, Japan. We have listeners in, you know, the United Kingdom, Germany. We've got a tremendous listenership also in Canada and Australia, of course, but then we've also got listeners in Russia. We've got listeners in Portugal. We've got listeners in remote countries that I don't even know the names of.
Like Durkistan.
Yeah, exactly. I think we may have Kazakhstan?
Kazakhstan. I'm shooting for Turkmenistan because that's my favorite one.
I think we've got one of those too, actually. I think we've got one listener there.
If for no other reason, I love the Stan countries because I love saying their name. Like Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Afghanistan.
See, folks, he's just showing off now. He's just showing off.
Yeah. I just like Stan, man.
But the point is, I'm glad Stan likes you too. But the thing is that, you know, our listenership has grown to a point, you know, through the downloads primarily, and it is a global audience. And the very reason that a lot of those people don't tune into the live stream is because, you know, well, heck, you know, in the United Kingdom, for instance, they're asleep right now. So we can't cater to, a live audience worldwide, but we can certainly provide the podcast audio. And what we'll hope to do also is to be soon migrating our stream over into a situation where we have a stream of our very own that we host, and that will be coupled with a video. So for our text message author who wrote and said we need to get our webcam working, we will certainly have that soon so that you can have a look at the state-of-the-art Graylian International Studios from which we broadcast on a weekly basis. You know, it's a fantastic studio facility that we have here. We'd love to share that with the listenership just as well, among other things. And that's the very reason, the act of sharing, that is why we have touched on this story having to do with the electromagnetic dangers that could be associated with Wi-Fi. And, you know, and again, the sensational aspect of this story, you know, having to do with, you know, the danger to human sperm count and sperm production, that is secondary to the fundamental issue here, and that is that it has long been speculated and questioned whether Wi-Fi internet could be detrimental to your health. Many people claim that it causes their brains to scramble, and there have been entire factions of people who have, you know, moved up into the hills and just to get away from this stuff, you know. They migrate back up into areas where they can live free of the influence of Wi-Fi internet, truly. And they claim that it affects them so badly that literally it causes headaches, it causes disorientation, dizziness, and things like that. And they, you know, there have been people, you know, who've, you know, banded together and said enough is enough, and they move way back off into the country so that they can live free of the influence of things like Wi-Fi internet. Now, I haven't ever suffered any ill effects that I know of as a result of being in close proximity to Wi-Fi internet. I remember working in radio, terrestrial radio, a few years ago. I worked, and my office was right next to a very large transmitter field, and I was in a multi-million-dollar HD facility at the time where I was working. And I'll just tell you this, at that facility, with the transmitter towers in the field literally adjacent to me, many of the workers talked about what we'd call the RF sludge, you know, the radio frequency, you know, depression, that sometimes you'd just get this feeling of just, I don't know, it was just kind of like this. You felt like you were just covered in peanut butter or something like that. That's literally how it felt certain days working out there at the radio ranch. And I remember that sensation, and I remember wanting so badly to get away from that sometimes. It literally, when I'd come home from the job, I'd come home from work in the evenings, and it would take me sometimes a couple of hours just to kind of get my head clear, you know, have a glass of wine, go out, you know, with the girlfriend, go have dinner, and just kind of chill out and relax, or chillax, as they say these days. That's what the kids say these days. The children call it chillaxing.
In the parlance of our time.
All those kids with their Dan Fogelberg and their hula hoops.
Well, I personally prefer, what's his name? You know, Brother Love's Travel and Salvation Show, Neil Diamond.
Well, yeah.
That's my guy right there, yeah. Man. On my vinyl LPs that I spin upstairs in my personal office with my personal bathroom, you know, when my secretaries come up and they talk to me and we have dinner, but we never have dinner by ourselves. There are always people nearby watching us, right?
You know, I think we've all discussed the fact that we should never reference either of the Neils due to the amount with which I despise their very core.
Okay.
So if you could not bring up either of the Neils again, I'd be greatly appreciated.
I'm making a reference to that right now. Never.
And that is Young and Diamond. Keep them away from my ears.
Chris right. has poor taste in music.
No, sometimes. I just don't have... Really, really, you think Neil Diamond and Neil ears. Young is good? I like Crosby, Stills, and Nash,
let me
but
think.
Once they
yes,
added Neil
they
Young, then they got whiny.
You know, guys, I think if you really looked at things in a semi-cosmological sense, you'd begin to realize that all the Neils really kind of stem from one single Neil that was a predecessor. Actually, it wasn't a Neil at all. It was a Luca, okay? Because New Scientist reported earlier this week, and this is true, that once upon a time, about 3 billion years ago, there lived a single organism here on planet Earth, here on Terra Firma. It was called Luca. It was an enormous mega-organism like none seen since. It filled the planet's oceans before splitting into three and giving birth to the ancestors of all living things on Earth today. Now, this strange picture that we're painting for you here emerges from efforts to pin down the last universal common ancestor to all life on planet Earth. Not the first life that emerged on Earth, but the life form that gave rise to all others. The granddaddy of all ours, as it would be. The latest results suggest LUCA, which is what last universal common ancestor stands for. Or rather, what LUCA, you know what I mean. The latest results suggest LUCA was the result of early life's fight to survive, attempts at which turned the ocean into a global genetic swap shop for hundreds of millions of years. Cells struggling to survive on their own exchanged useful parts with each other and without competition, which is, of course, the entire premise upon which Darwinistic evolution is built. And they effectively created a global mega-organism that spanned the entire globe. It was around 2.9 billion years ago that LUCA split into the three domains of life, the single-celled bacteria and the archaea, and then the more complex eukaryotes that gave... Am I pronouncing that correctly, Mr. Hayes? Eukaryotes? I can't remember from my biology classes.
I'm sorry. Spell it, because I don't see the article.
Anyway, hold on.
Okay, whatever.
It's not that important right now. They gave rise to animals and plants, of course, flora, fauna. Am I pronouncing flora and fauna correctly, producer?
I'll give you this one.
Okay. Hardly any fossil evidence remains from this time, and any genes that date that far back are likely to have mutated beyond recognition. That isn't an insuperable obstacle to painting LUCA's portrait, says Gustavo Cietano Anolois. What is up with all these foreign names tonight of the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign? While the sequence of genes changes quickly, the three-dimensional structure of the proteins they code is more resistant to the test of time. So if all organisms today make a protein with the same overall structure, he says, it's a good bet that that structure was present in LUCA. He calls such structures living fossils and points out that since the function of a protein is highly dependent on its structure, they could tell us what LUCA could do. The basis of this is this, that LUCA essentially was able to, as opposed to competing with other organisms, LUCA, the so-called last universal common ancestor, was a series, a system of cellular organisms spanning the entire globe that cooperated with one another. And they could literally test certain proteins that would be beneficial to survival, take these into their systems, swap genetic information that would take that information about good and bad proteins and other kinds of interactions on a chemical level that would occur. And it would take this information and it could literally kind of transmit it to its others in simple cellular contact that would occur. And this allowed this this kind of global organism or group of organisms to proliferate and do so very, very effectively. If LUCA was made of cells, it must have had membranes. And a researcher with the University of Osnabrück in Germany thinks he knows what kind. He traced the history of the membrane proteins and concluded that LUCA could only make simple isoprenoid membranes, which are leaky compared to the more modern designs. I love that expression, designs. LUCA probably also had an organelle, a cell compartment with a specific function. Organelles were thought to be the preserve of the eukaryotes, but in 2003, researchers found an organelle called the acidocalcisome in bacteria. They've now found that tiny granules in some archaea are also acidocalcisomes, or at least their precursors, and that means that acidocalcisomes are found in all three domains of life and probably date back to this LUCA organism. So again, in basic language, these simple cellular organisms had a lot of the basic components that modern cells today still have, although probably more primitive renditions, and they utilize simple exchanges of information, genetic information, to determine cellular information that had been gathered by some, I guess you might say, members, and that would be passed on to others in a comprehensive way that was conducive to, proliferation And they did so in a way that did not involve competition. And if anything, it was entirely a cooperative kind of a thing, which literally led to a single cellular organism that spanned the entire globe. How fascinating is that? Who knows? And thinking about the history and the diversity of life as it has existed at various points throughout history here on planet Earth, it brings to mind something else that I'd like to put out to the listenership. You know, earlier this week, I wrote an article that appeared at Mysterious Universe. And speaking of Mysterious Universe, by the way, if you would like to visit the website Mysterious Universe, you will see also that I wrote an article that appeared there. And it is titled Cryptic Communication from the Cosmos, Proof of Extraterrestrials and Radio Signals. That article details what we discussed during the first hour, and it actually provides links to a lot of the articles that I discussed available through the National Security Agency's website. But another article that was featured in Mysterious Universe earlier this week, penned by yours truly, deals with the potential for diversity throughout the universe of different kinds of alien life. And if we are to indeed determine and discover eventually alien life, we also probably need to diversify just as well. Again, I'm looking back through human history, not human history. Well, you might say, you know, not humans as we know it, but, you know, the precursors to life of today, including the Luca organism. We look at the precursors to modern life on planet Earth, and there have been tremendous instances of diversity present on planet Earth. Think about, you know, not just the dinosaurs, the early mammals, you know, creatures like Archaeopteryx, early dinosaurs that began to exhibit bird-like behavior, you know. And here's something interesting. You know, Tom Fusco, our guest from you know, recently on the program, pointed this out. He notes that when you look at Archaeopteryx, okay, we have yet to discover in the fossil record animals similar to Archaeopteryx that, you know, leading up to the formation of a literal dinosaur with feathers. Similarly, we haven't found many you know, instances of animals following Archaeopteryx that similarly were a, you know, a further stage between dinosaur and bird. What we see is we see Archaeopteryx appeared to be a dinosaur that was clad in feathers like the birds of today, and obviously an ancient ancestor. And that doesn't mean that these, you know, these ancient, you know, transient examples of evolutionary, you know, instances of evolutionary progression throughout time. It's not to say that they don't exist at all. Maybe they just haven't been found yet. But it is interesting that, you know, for the time being, Archaeopteryx remains kind of singular in terms of early ancestral representations of what we would, you know, consider birds and avian today. It is very interesting. We're still looking for that missing link between, you know, humans and our ancient ancestors just as well. And supposing just for a moment that, well, what if those missing links don't actually exist? What if there were indeed gaps in the evolutionary record and in the historical and archaeological record? What might that indicate? You know, I think it sheds a little light on the holes that exist in our current theory, and I think it also suggests strongly the potential for things like mutation and sudden changes, mutation that can occur that literally change an organism fundamentally and pretty radically, literally almost overnight, but in a way that is potentially beneficial to that animal's survival. You know, and thinking in those terms, you know, we talked a couple of weeks ago on the program about Noam Chomsky and his theory that maybe language itself could have developed as a result of a bizarre instantaneous mutation in certain members of our early ancestor ancestor groups. And so therefore, if we think about things in terms of mutation and the way that ancient life on this planet could have evolved and changed, not so much always the case that it was a very gradual change over hundreds of thousands of years as evolution posits, but instead that occasionally a random and very radical change could occur literally overnight that is entirely conducive to an organism's ability to thrive in its environment. That's a fascinating concept. And these kinds of things could indeed lead to the potential for very strange formations of life and life-like organisms. And when I say life-like, people probably think, wait a minute, what is life like? You know, what exactly does that entail? You know, I read a report recently about a German scientist who literally believes that he can get metallic particles to behave in life-like ways. And he thinks that if, you know, with a little bit more experimentation, he could literally cause certain inanimate objects to behave and even evolve as though they were animate, as though they were life. And if we can replicate life-like organisms here on planet Earth, what I would say is life as we know it here on planet Earth may exist in entirely different forms and structures elsewhere in the universe. It may not be what here on planet Earth, by the justifications of the physicality of our planet, what we would call life. And I think, you know, this is also further evidenced by NASA reports that have been put out that detail the potential for plasma life forms that may exist in deep space, springing to life from dust particles and things like that that take on helical structures. You know, it's almost like inanimate matter, given enough time, will start to come together and miraculously begin to take shape and take form and begin to kind of spontaneously become autonomous and then begin to become active and animate, and then with time that potentially can become sentient. I mean, it's fascinating. It's fascinating. You know, call it God, call it nature, call it what you want, but there is certainly some sort of divine magic to the nature of the universe. And whatever it is, in all its many forms, it's very possible to me that there could be life-like, by our own justifications, life-like organisms that could exist in deep space that we wouldn't even recognize immediately as life, but that very much are animate and autonomous, under their own control, moving around and you know, operating in their environments with some kind of purpose, whether or not they are fully aware of that purpose themselves. Who knows, the eventual discovery of life may be merely in humans accepting what life might be like elsewhere in the cosmos, and then eventually looking for that and accepting the diversities and the potentials for diversity that might exist throughout the universe. It's pretty remarkable. Who knows? And maybe when it comes to mutation, life here on planet Earth hasn't finished. We may see strange things out there yet that we couldn't have even conceived. I'm Micah Hanks. This is the Grayling Report. We'll be back right after this. All right, guys, I know you've been putting it off. Your thirst for knowledge is incredible, insatiable, but your wallet says otherwise. So you haven't been able to subscribe to all those classy magazines out there bringing you to the edges of the fringe just like you and I do every week here on the Grayling Report. Well, good news for you. You can now subscribe to Intrepid Magazine for an entire year and just pay $19.95. Really? That's it? It's no joke. $19.95 will get you an entire year of incredible insight from authors like Nick Redfern, Scotty Roberts, and of course yours truly. It's Intrepid Magazine, boldly going. Visit www.intrepidmag.com today and feel your mind expanding tomorrow.
Hey parents, introducing the Communicizer. Go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
I love you, Dad.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Of Appalachia. It's the Grayling Report with Micah Hanks. To join the program by phone, call 828-398-4886. Skype users can reach the program by calling Skype ID Grayling Report. And now, from hundreds of miles beneath terra firma, in the depths of the hollow earth, live from the Grayling Bunker, it's Micah Hanks.
Welcome back to the final segment of this week's edition of the Grayling Report. I'm your host, the Mouth of the South, Micah Hanks. Welcome back, my friends, although it is almost time to bid you adieu. So, you know, looking at the course of the conversation, you know, we have talked about the diversity, the potential for diversity of alien life, and I do certainly think that there is a great potential for diversity, far greater than probably most of us are willing to accept. And that's just when we're taking into consideration the potential for extraterrestrial life, physical, biological organisms that exist outside this planet. You know, when it comes to UFOs and things like that, as we've already addressed, we don't have proof that extraterrestrial life is here on planet Earth. It's a strong possibility with a lot of UFO reports. I don't think that can be denied. But we don't have proof. I saw a very interesting interview. And by the way, speaking of interesting interviews, I want to drive people's attention over to thegraylianreport.com. As I've said many times during the program tonight, you know, we're constantly trying to improve the program. And while you're there, if the spirit moves you, in the center column at the top of the page, you'll see the PayPal donate button. We do encourage people, if you have the time and the ability and the resources to do so, you know, your donations are welcome, and they always help us to improve the broadcast and make it better. You know, we've had a few listeners who've had problems with the actual stream dropping out tonight. And so, you know, eventually when we're able to host our own stream, which I'm hoping literally in the next few weeks we'll be able to make the move and have that established so that people, there will be a private stream that we will host at the Grayling Report, the website. You literally go to the website and launch the stream from there, and you can listen to the program live from the website. We'll have interactive chat features, everything hooked up right there at the website, and that way it'll be all comprehensive and all-inclusive, and people won't have to worry about services like Ustream and things like that have been previously hosting the program, and unfortunately, as I understand it, not doing a very good job.
Yeah, and due to the price and just bandwidth restrictions of Ustream, you know, I don't know if anyone knows, but we've got a very limited, you know, at one time listenership. Like, we can only accommodate so many people, but with this new stream, we'll be able to have, you know, upwards of, you know, 100 people. So as much as I love chatting with the same 4 people every week, there will be more people and we can get more input. And then we can also, you know, improve the show that way via the chat room and what I moderate. And hopefully, actually, I'd like to employ some forums on the website as well.
Yeah, there are a lot of different things that we're going to try and incorporate. You know, and a large part of it really has been, you know, just finding time for everything on our end of things. You know, with the Grayling Report, it's been primarily an internet news source, you know, but as we've been making the shift over to being a live weekly broadcast, and who knows, at some point it may be more than just weekly. Matt Oakley starts crying as we say this, but in truth, the thing is that as media is changing globally, we're changing the way that we reach people. And the way that we, you know, within the different, you know, mediums by which we hope to reach people, we're also changing the internal methods that we're using to supply those mediums. And so we're always trying to improve those. So when you visit the Grayling Report, you know, of course, if the spirit moves you, we do encourage people maybe to drop a dollar in the proverbial bucket. We've already had a few donations from very, very wonderful folks, listeners like you, who've chosen to try and help improve the quality of the broadcast. But if you do go to the website, right now on the homepage, we've got a number of articles, but I encourage people to have a look. If it's not there on the homepage, all you have to do is just scroll to the bottom and click the older posts tag, and it'll take you back. There's an article titled Jacques Vallée on a Theory of Everything Else that features a very brief discussion from Jacques Vallée talking about a variety of different things. And Jacques Vallée, of course, he's talking about physics in this TEDx presentation that he's giving, but Jacques Vallée is not just a physicist. Jacques Vallée might very well be called also a folklorist. He's certainly a computer scientist, and he happens to have also authored a number of fantastic books dealing with the subject of UFOs. And Jacques Vallée is one of the leading proponents of the notion that indeed UFOs may not be entirely representative of extraterrestrial intelligence. I think at one time he believed that, but now he's opened his mind to other possibilities. If we want to solve the mysteries of this universe, If we want to hope to have any inkling of an idea of what worlds may exist beyond our own, the key will be to accepting diversity in thought on our own part. An open mind in addition to a bold vision of a tomorrow that incorporates possibilities that may seem unfathomable today, but that will probably change the very structure of our lives and our reality in the world of tomorrow. And with that, my friends, I leave you on behalf of all of those involved in this program, producer Chris Hayes, engineer Matt Oakley, Holly, Dick Oakley, John Anderson, and of course yours truly, the mouth of the South, Micah Hanks. It is the Graylian Report. We bid you adieu. Thank you so much for spending 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern time every Tuesday here on our dark little corner of the web. It is the Graylian Report, bringing you weird news, anomalies, and exopolitics from beyond the fringe, and of course your insights. You can always reach us, send us commentary about what you'd like to hear more about on the program, info@graylianreport.com. And for now, and until next week, I'm Micah Hanks, my friends. As always, stay strange.